And welcome to Doc Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
I'm Hickling.
Yes. Wait, no. You're not Hickling. You're Matthew Dunford.
You've ruined this already.
I know. International man of mystery, Pat Dunford, has graced us with his presence. He's taken a break from casting tactical tips and smashing the European meta, terrifying them with an increasingly diverse range of factions, and has decided to instead play CanCon. How you doing, Pat? Few? Dunford? Ling?
I have no idea how this intro works.
It really depends on the day.
It really does. And today apparently is just not working out.
So, I in fact am not Pat Dunford, I am Matthew Hickling. I am the recent winner of the CanCon Masters 2019.
Yeah, fucking congratulations as well.
Thank you. It's only taken me about 7 years to get to a level where I can win something, but that's alright.
Nice.
Hey, I've never won CanCon. You beat me to that.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Hmm. So, for those who aren't aware, Pat here has basically... Well, we had a WTC last year, and Pat Hugh here was on one of the teams. He was actually on your team, Brian.
Yeah, Wobbegong.
Wobbegong. And yeah. He goes in and comes to us and goes like, so I got this great dreamer list here. I've been working on it for a while. I think it's really good. It's cut all the crap, and it's like, you know, I think it's... pretty much where I want to go with
all Dreamer. Business.
All business, no pleasure.
All business all the time.
And we look at it, and then we look at Pat Dunford's list, the original Pat Dunford's list, and they're identical.
Which no, I don't think he'd actually won anything at the first time, because I was chatting about it with Affy.
Mm.
I don't think Pat had won anything with it at that point, or if he had, I hadn't bothered logging on to look at anything. Because, I mean, there's only so many ways you can write a DM list, right? So, Duck Menagerie for those listening at home. It's, and, like, because you've only really got, like, 6, 8, 14, and 15-point models you can throw around in there for beasts.
Yeah,
and so all it was taking that 4K Drager, 2 Skin and Moans list from the previous WTC, dropping Carriana Rose so you get 6 free cards, which leaves 18 points, which is 3 great... Gorehounds, and it's like, well, that seems to work, and it's a very simple change. So, like, it wasn't like I was inventing the wheel or anything, but I came up with that damn list. God damn you all.
Yes, he came up with the concept of net decking well ahead of his time. So, as you can imagine, we gave that shit a long, 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 long time over this.
I've been getting called Patthew Dickford, Patthew Dunford, Patthew Hick. For like every variation,
it was
for about a year now, so it's good fun.
Yeah, it's been beautiful, and he's decided to take out all this anger, as you said, one CanCon Masters with it. I guess actually,
but wait,
yeah.
I mean, we're gonna do a bit of spoiler here, but who were the two lists you played against in the CanCon Masters?
The semifinals
and
the finals.
Yeah, what were the two?
Are the two casters or the two players?
Casters. Oh, players. Yeah.
Okay, the two casters. Not something I'd entirely teched for, but they were Sturm und Drang and Grail.
Ah, yes. The tournament staple Sturm und Drang with a Dracodile. Yeah. I didn't get that wrong.
Played by another Team Wobbegong member, Liam.
Yep.
And, of course, Colin Hill.
Former WTC winner Colin Hill.
Yes.
Yeah.
Colin Hill finally united at last in holy matrimony with Grail. And a whole bunch of broken models that Grail can deliver to.
I think out of the 6 rounds Colin played in, he ended 4 of 6 games by round 2.
Yes.
Yep.
Because he one-listed Grail through the entire tournament.
Well, he one-listed Lord of the Feast, who had a wonderful caster attachment called Grail.
How apropos, actually. I can't disagree with any of that.
Yep, so that was a thing that did happen. Colin got to live the dream, Grail got to make it too.
Yep.
Yeah.
And one day he'll go all the way.
And Dreamer got to smash down everyone's hopes and dreams.
Yep, no, so another spoiler for the cast, but I one-listed Dreamer the entire event. Didn't play my second list. Didn't even have a second list when I rocked up that day. I didn't know what I was playing. To give you some background, like I was pretty burnt out after WTC. Didn't have the best performance personally, only went 2-4, but had a great time with the team. Didn't every time I try and venture out into Bump, I just realize that it's Bump and I hate Holoman, and so I end up back at DM. So I was feeling a little bit stale in the faction. You know, there's only so many heavies you can play with when you're playing just DM.
And so many variations of the same thing as well, right? Like, you're basically like, what are your heavy choices? They're two.
Yeah, there's two. There's about to be three.
You also brought up an earlier point, which I'd like to come back to, which is because, spoiler alert, a bunch of us jumped into new factions, or even just, like, tried out borrowed models for different factions. But with lesser, well, I wouldn't call it lesser, but the minor factions like Grimkin, like Crucible Guard, even, like, Convergence, you have a bit of a problem where all of the heavies kind of tend to, or heavies and lights tend to cost very similarly, they're very similarly point costed. So your options can get quite restricted. And in this case, that's exactly what happened here with like Dreamer. It's why the three Gorehound, it's why there's no like random rate, like, you know, Rattlers.
You're like, yeah, you either have to take out two Gorehounds for a Rattler, and then you can sort of slide in Carrion a Rose, but then you're costing yourself a free card as well, which is probably going to be a Crabbit. And as you'll hear later, there was a Crabbit who was the absolute god tier of the tournament.
Yes.
So you don't want to drop out one of those. And, yeah, it's just it's so hard to do variations on lists and take models out and bring models in.
Yeah. No, agreed. And I think that's one of the things they've sort of recognized, which is why they're adding more options to a couple of these, like, lists. I mean, I'd be very curious. If we got time, I'd also like to go through the new Grimkin stuff. I know we don't usually do CID casts, but, look, you seem to know...
I think you want to talk about list building after talk about CanCon, and I really kind of want to talk about Grimkin's future list building potential, even though we'll be looking into the future with a little bit of fog in our future because we're not exactly sure how it'll all come out.
Yeah,
but we have a pretty good idea using the CID's speculation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and to talk about the CID, because like I'd only played maybe like less than 10 games since the WTC. So in the last 4 months, like I played one sort of 3-round regional tournament, and then a couple of Wednesday nights down at the store. And you know, with the CID, I was actually starting to feel quite down on the fiction, because when I was sitting there watching people discuss how much they love Holoman and how good they are, and I'm like, I feel like I'm playing a different faction to everyone else online, because I just cannot get them to work. Like, Bump's a hell of a fun list, but I just don't see where a lot of the
power choices
and a lot of the lists that people take in Bump, I just don't see how it works, and I haven't been able to replicate that success myself. So I was a little bit down on the faction, to be honest.
Well, I wouldn't say that's just a you thing with regards to Holoman, because
That's an Australia thing.
Yeah, like, I will freely admit, none of us at all respect Holoman, and I don't think you should.
No matter how much the Americans keep telling us otherwise.
Yeah.
PB staff included. Sorry, and Will, ex-staff.
Look, Will, if you're still listening to this cast, we'll make sure that by the end of it, you're not listening to it, because we're going to shit on Holoman pretty much all night.
I did come in with a plan, with the Masters Day 1, Champions Day 2, and a 75-point Steamrollers Day 3, that's a potential of 6 casters played, so I was going to play every single caster across the faction, pair DM and Bump, force myself to take Holoman, and just see what I can come up with, see if I can, find a diamond in the rough, just get reps in, basically, just treat it as a funsy sort of chance to catch up with mates, have a few drinks, and play some lists I wouldn't normally play.
Yeah.
When I rocked up on Day 1... my intention was to play Dreamer paired with Old Witch in Bump. I looked at Old Witch, and I don't like Old Witch. She's a strong caster. I just like Arcana, so I feel like it's just a little bit less fun when I play her, so I didn't bring her. I thought, I might play King, because I played a lot of King of Nothing Bump. When I rocked up and I was unpacking my models, I looked at all of my cast gimps, and I was so hungover I could not be bothered dealing with unpacking all of them. So I just wrote down an old King of Nothing Dark Menagerie list with just 3 Cage Ragers, 3 Skin and Bones, 2 Gorehounds, and your usual 6 free cards, and Carrianna, and that was it. Just for the sake of writing down a second list that people might believe I'd play, because I've played a lot of King of Nothing.
I mean, I would, because I loved your King of Nothing list during WTC prep. I'm actually sad that it didn't do better, because that list was fucking hilarious.
The one with all the cast gimps and madcaps and...
yeah.
Chaos behind cloud walls. And yeah, no, it was Bedlam. The trees. God, I love Witchwoods.
God, I hate Witchwoods. I think they're still trash. And then, unfortunately, I have to respect them due to your doing. Do you know how embarrassing that is? having to actually care about Witchwoods.
Although, sadly, I think they're going to be one of the first things cut in the new landscape of Bump.
Yeah, it's like a Witchwood or a Melody Man. What was it? Milady Man.
One of the many ways, and yeah, it's...
The Grave Ghoul.
4 or 5 points.
Yeah. Anyhow, you basically... We'll probably run through your games. We'll run through your round in, and then we'll probably get into ours rather quicker, because you had a probably more interesting run than we did.
All right, do you want to do just like... Each of us talk about round one, round two, round three. You want me to go all the way through and then you guys talk?
Yeah, you go all the way through. It's fine. Keep it.
Okay. I'll keep it brief
with mine anyway.
You're assuming I remember things.
Okay. Well.
Yeah. Well, that's what
I will be brief anyway.
Like, I remember who I played against, but
I had to shoot somewhere.
I was super hungover day one, as I said, and not keen. The only things I really wanted to dodge the whole tournament was PT and Tharn in Iona or Wormwood.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, round one, I managed to get Cameron, Sydney player, who we'd been drinking the night before, but never actually played against each other. He had Pythags, PT, and Lilith 3. I don't know the names of anyone's themes, but he had 3 Carnivians and some other assorted malarkey.
I'm going to assume he was in Oracles. I can't remember what he's like. Who the fuck knows?
Sounds good. Like, I didn't really pay attention to anyone's list all day. My plan was just to put Dreamer on the table and shovel Cage Rages forward. So I managed to game him into thinking that I have too much RFP to play Pythags in PT, and so he very kindly drops Lilith 3.
Are you... okay.
So there's a saying that, and Jack Ding approved of this, a fair bit in but from poker where you play the player, not the cards.
Mm.
There was a lot of that this weekend. a lot of me just, you know, having words in people's ears before the games and hopefully getting the matchup I wanted. So I played this pretty badly early on. I put Mirage on a Skin and Moans with the intention of putting it behind a forest that I could then Mirage into and charge out of. Instead, I just put it in the forest. So I lost that for free pretty much from, I think, Lilith 3 shooting and a spray from a Carnivian and maybe a Naga, I'm not sure. But managed to punch back pretty hard with my Gorehounds under Manifest Destiny, who do a surprising amount of work.
There's nothing surprising about that by this point. Those fuckers are just, like, cancer. They're the worst.
Yeah, like, I managed to take the Naga, left the Naga on 1, which is really disappointing because... it kept his Wraithbane Animus to dealing with the Gremlin Swarms. Managed to, I think, almost half kill a Carnivian with 1 Gorehound, which was interesting.
Yep.
He didn't have Spiny Growth up. I just realized that he can't really commit because the Carnivians will struggle to kill the Arm 21 Cage Ragers. And I'll slowly win and grind him back. But I managed, like, just kept this thing in my head all weekend that as long as I don't get Dreamer killed, as long as I keep the death knell up, everything will be okay. Mm. And so Dreamer sat back behind a forest. I didn't put her in it. Red. The death knell stood on the only angle he could see around the forest with both of my Kravitz back looking after the death knell. Didn't bother about shield guarding any of my beasts. And eventually just managed to push him back and grind him out to the point where he just had to concede too much ground for scenario, and I think I won that 5-0 on scenario on turn 4.
Yeah,
top
nice.
4, I think. So feeling pretty good about that. Round 2, I played a local Canberra guy. His name was Gary. He had a Madrak 2 list that had, like, double Femblaze, double champions, all that good stuff. And then he had this Hunter's Grim list that had 3 bombers and 2 war wagons, and I don't really know what war wagons do, or Hunter's Grim for that matter. And he dropped them. I went, okay, I guess I just keep shoveling Cage Rages forwards and hope for the best. And unfortunately for him, he got so caught up in just lobbing bombs and sprays and shots and every other bit of chaos at my army and took out, like, I think 2 heavies or maybe a heavy and a half. But he just didn't do enough to contest scenario, and I managed to just pretty much win scenario top of 3.
Mm.
So that was a bit unlucky for him, but yeah, it's the way it goes sometimes.
Top of 3? top of three, so he didn't contest and you scored, and then on
No, I think I scored two on
his turn.
Bottom of two. He was bottom of two. I scored two on his turn, and then
that's almost not a lose.
Yeah. I will say though, that is one of the strengths of that, like Grima list and in Grimkin in general, Dark Menagerie, is you get to play trolls for a bit, as in like that old school troll brick, you just bounce so much shit.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling. And
that'll come up a lot in the next game, because in round three I played against David Potts, Potsy.
Ah, yes.
A long time legend of the Australian scene.
WTC winner.
Yep.
Yep.
One of my teammates.
So he had Mac 3 and Mac 1. I hadn't really paid attention to what Scorn had done after the CID, so I just dropped Dreamer and figured I'd figure out what to do after that. So he dropped Mac 1. It was a really interesting list that I haven't played in against anything like it before. It had a Mammoth, Molik Khan, Siege Animantrax, a...
Did you say this was a Mac 1 list?
Yeah.
Mac 1.
Damn, alright.
Mammoth, Molik Khan, Siege Animantrax, a Gladiator... Some Cyclops of some kind.
Did it have a spear, a sword, or a gun?
I really don't remember. He didn't do
or
much.
Is it a wizard?
I don't think it was a wizard.
Or a wizard Cyclops.
I don't think it was a savage. It must be a brute. Maybe he didn't even have one at all. I don't really know. So, after reading Mac 1's card and seeing the plan was pretty much a Threat Infinity Mammoth with Jackhammer.
Yeah.
That's fine. I don't have any range attacks where I can accidentally give the Mammoth some extra speed. That's one of the good things about not having range attacks in Dreamer. While it makes you vulnerable to things like Hellmouth because you can't reach out and shoot them, you can't accidentally trigger things like Vengeance and Speedy Mammoths. So that was good.
I guess that is one weird upside, sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's not the first time I've heard him say that statement.
Fair enough.
I ran up, he ran up. He did have the Mammoth... just within 16 of one of my Cage Rages. So I ran that up 8 to put Enfeeble on the Mammoth because he didn't have any upkeep removal.
Was not a wizard then.
And for those who don't know at home, Enfeeble is an upkeep spell that does -2 to attack and damage rolls, be it range, melee, anything. And then I just, you know, as always, moved up my Cage Rage brick and got ready to receive to face and hopefully come punching out the other side. So he sent the Mammoth in and Molik in. He managed to kill... I think he killed two Cage Rages and Gorehound. The Siege Animantrax failed to kill a Cage Rager. I was a little bit sad of that because I was hoping to get to do the gotcha of when he tried to jackhammer the Mammoth of using Arcade Vortex to say no, which would have been good fun. But... I then moved Dreamer up into melee with the Siege Animantrax, teleported it using Abyssal Gate, turned it around, started wailing on it in the back, put a Gremlin Swarm next to the Mammoth, and killed Molik Khan. So all we had left was a Mammoth that had no mind, and a Gremlin Swarm next to it, and Enfeeble, and Entropic Aura from the Battle Engine, so he couldn't heal it. And no Battle Engine and no Molik Khan. Now, that might have happened over two turns. I can't remember the specifics, but I did enough that he couldn't really do much. And then his dice just went completely AWOL, which really didn't help the situation for him at all. He just, yeah, he couldn't hit anything with anybody. He couldn't roll any decent damage. And... it always, I think, feels worse when your dice do that against a Manifest Destiny caster.
Yeah, because their dice is just basically going like, oh, casual 9s and 11s.
Oh, when you're rolling just like, you know, 5, 4, 1.
Yeah.
And you're always removing that 1, so you just... It's always just feels above the curve, and it always just feels oppressive when your dice are shitting the bed when someone else is just pounding you to death with good dice.
I actually think that's a common thread between not just the Dreamer, but also with Tharn and a couple other lists. Because Tharn have some pretty good numbers on theirs, and then when your dice shit the bed against them, it usually is just terrible for a bunch of reasons. A whole bunch of their tricks start kicking in, like dodge, rapid healing, just, you know, tough in general. And you're just like, well, this Tharn guy I've left alive is going to eat my entire unit of guys without tough. Well, maybe they have tough, but it doesn't matter because, like, that tree's too close, some shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a bit of a rough game for Potsy. Like, I felt bad for his dice at the end of that because I sort of, I mean, he had to send the mammoth in, but like cage rays are just deceptively hard to kill. I mean, two of them at 28 points is 64 boxes of armor 21 if you can't reach out and kill the death knell.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's very hard to trade favorably into those stats when you're trying to alpha. So being able to counterpunch him hard enough that we were on about par, but I just took out that big piece of the mammoth and just sort of held it in place going, well, you can't really hurt me. And I'm not overly worried about you. That, yeah.
That yeah.
was pretty much the end of that game. I think he ended up conceding towards the end where he just couldn't actually accomplish much.
Nah, fair. All right, what about the finals?
Round four. So by now, like, the nerves are kicking in big time because, you know, the best I've ever reached is top eight in Masters before losing a bunch of games and ending up, you know, mid-table.
Mm.
And I got a paired against Josh Bates, a.k.a. Gigantor, a.k.a. the man who has only ever smashed me comprehensively whenever we've played in the past. So he had Wormwood in Tharn and Kruger 2 with the Wolds. Is that Bones? Is that what that is?
Yeah, Bones.
Was I don't know the name of the
Yeah, was. No, it's Bones. It's Bones of Orgros.
Kruger so, Bones, yes.
Yeah.
So I think... The thing that looked miserable at the start was the thing that was actually my saving grace. Because we were playing on Spread the Net, he dropped Kruger.
Mm-hmm.
Which I played pretty much the exact same game as this against Adam Bailey from the Welsh WTC team at the WTC, my Dreamer list versus Kruger 2 in a live scenario. So I had, and it was one of those games where I started turn 3, 4 points down, desperately scrambling to not lose on scenario, and eventually won on like turn 6 after grinding out a win. So I knew I could do the grind as long as I just didn't lose.
Mm.
And I wasn't playing against the unknown powerhouse that was Tharn. I had, you know, I understood how stuff worked. So it didn't stop me from still copying it a bit early. And this game's a bit of a blur. So I'm just going to say, like, Josh was always 2 or 3 points up. Towards, I think it was my turn. No, it was about my turn 4. I tried to trigger sacrifice, but we realized that I was trying to trigger it off a throw, and it was just collateral, so it wasn't an enemy attack, and so I couldn't do that. And so then the moment had passed to get a good sacrifice run. So I still had sacrifice in my hand.
Yeah.
And I'd spent like 3 turns chasing Kruger around the board with a skin and moans, because despite managing to clear a bunch of his heavies, I just couldn't kill all the stones and all the other stuff he could use to contest and score with. And, like, while I was making phantasms and contesting, I was always just down on scenario and just hanging in there. So I managed to, on turn, I think it was the top of 6, I managed to trample the Skin of Moans into the middle of the board, Abyssal Gate one of his heavies into range, and killed that heavy, made it a large phantasm, ran it into his big zone, killed enough that I was sort of catching up on scenario. Now, Josh, all we had to do was really kill that large phantasm to score enough points to, you know, be unassailable. He had, and keep like a bunch of transfers and a wall next to him, like one of the higher health ones, and he was going to be fine. But under time pressure, I think it was that he, when he moved Kruger into the zone to kill the phantasm, I managed to trigger sacrifice on the bottom of 6, which took that 5 health skin and moans back up to full.
Oh,
he also left Kruger within 10 inches, just within 10 inches of that skin and moans. And so he moved stuff around, basically scored enough points to be in an unassailable lead. I couldn't even tie on the top of 7, let alone be fine by his 7th turn. So I sort of sat there for a while. I had about 10, 15 minutes on my clock, so I sort of sat there, had a bit of a joke with the people watching because I think we were the last game going. I was just sort of watching the table, looking around, going, oh, shit, maybe I could just assassinate Kruger. And I measured it, and I realized I was just within 10. And so then I'm like my brain couldn't handle doing the math. So all I knew was that I had to Animus to be able to charge because of the wall in the way, and then charge, which left me with 4 attacks against defense. I think 15 Kruger is, so needing 8. With 3 transfers, so I need to kill him on every single swing. And, for him to just not transfer one and then be fine. And I also had 2 shifting stones in base-to-base contact blocking that path as well. And so, you know, to all involved, it sounded like the most hilarious, dumb thing in the world. I'm like, well, I'm going to lose anyway. Let's just go ham. So I trample a Cage Rager over, kill one of the stones. I activate Dreamer and Abyssal Gate the other stone out the way, and then realize that I can just walk to within shooting range of Kruger and stationary him.
Now, oh, I remember this, because this is where I jumped in. I was starting to watch. Because I remember you going through and like, oh, I don't know if I could do this, I don't know if I can do this. And then you hold roller. And then, because I'd had to play Dreamer earlier that day, I then remembered, oh yeah, Dreamer has Future Sight. So you just casually throw a 2d6, like, stationary.
Up until the point where I activated Dreamer, I'd forgotten that she even had the stationary gun. Like, that wasn't even part of the plan at the start of this assassination run. So I needed to use 3 Fury for the Abyssal Gate. I needed to keep 3 Fury up my sleeve for Manifest Destiny, which left me with 1 Fury to either boost with Future Sight, the 7 I needed to damage the stone, or the 8 I needed to stationary Kruger. Managed to hard roll both of those, so I ended up just camping one. And the Skinner charges in. And I'm like, oh, it's still going to be pretty hard to get through all of Kruger's transfers. So on the charge attack roll with Manifest Destiny, I roll 6, 6, 6, 1 on the damage. So that was good. At dice plus 5, that was 23 damage.
Yeah.
And the second swing, I think I rolled 6, 4, 2 or something. So that was 15 damage. So, and that second transfer killed his only transfer target and blew back 3 damage onto him, at which point it was mathematically impossible with dice plus 5 to not kill him.
Yeah, that was the part I was like, hang on, how are you not killing this guy?
Yeah, well, I hadn't factored in the stationary or anything at the start of this assassination run. It was one point I was even going to be trampling to get there, then I realised I had to kill the stones. Like, it was not well thought out. It was end of the day, stress, like, all of it. Just, yeah, didn't calculate it, and somehow just, it was like...
Didn't matter, played for and gotten.
It was like picking up my shovel and going, man, it's going to take me weeks to dig up this treasure. And then, like, the first swing of the shovel, you just hit the treasure chest and you're like, oh, that was right there. Okay.
Beautiful. And that going into the finals. You probably, if you weren't the last game, then I think it was the game next to you, which I'm pretty sure was Colin versus Batesy, that was the last one to finish. But you were in good company.
So that ended day one. So... the way King Kong Masters works is the top 4 at the end of day 1 play their semi-finals and finals after the champions qualifies in day 2, so at about 7 o'clock at night, I think it was planned for.
Yeah.
So I dropped out of champions because playing 6 rounds in a day did not sound appealing to me at all, which was good because it gave me a chance to stand around and chat to people and, you know, socialize, but... just because I didn't have anything to distract myself, I started to get real, real nervous, especially talking to people about how, you know, Sturm and Dragon Arcadius, I had no real answers for. Colin's list, I had no real answers for. All I could hope was that I got Arian, and he somehow dropped Kruger 2, and I could do that all over again and maybe make the final. That was my hopes going into the finals.
We'll have to talk about the Sturm and Dragon list later, because it's fucking hilarious. But before that, I guess we'll do our run-throughs. So, it was a thing in Sydney, like, a lot of us were either just waiting on new shit or just not satisfied with what we were playing before. For my part, I was waiting on the Doom Reaver CID, and when that was rather apparently not coming out, I'm like, I could just replay my WTC list, but I just kind of want to take this CanCon easy, I don't really give a shit. I know, I'll just borrow an army. I ended up borrowing, actually, Brian's Crucible Guard.
Partially someone else's, and then partially somebody else's, and bags got locked in cars, and then lists changed, and models moved, and who knows what Chris was playing by the end of it.
I was basically playing a Frankenstein of 3 different people's Crucible Guard lists. Going back to when we did a Crucible Guard cast, like, one of my favorite casters of Crucible Guard is Locke, because she has a whole bunch of things I like in Warjack casters. She has Warpath, one of my favorite spells in the game. She has Redline, which is, like, probably top tier among Jack buffs, and she herself is just actually pretty cool for getting all of that things working. She has Jackhammer as well, which is a spell I've never had access to and quite enjoy. And so I was like, all right, look, I wrote a lock list up, I played it a bit, and I quite liked it. It was pretty much 2 of every heavy, and then a Liberator, and then some other shit. You know, it had 2 units of Alchemists, and I think the other free card was Alice. I say this because I didn't ever play it on the first day, because the first day I was like, paired it with a Sylvester list. And I realized one big problem with Crucible Guard, although this is an inverted commas problem. When you have access to Sylvester, and Sylvester is literally options the guy, it turns out you can make any possible argument to play Sinestro, right? There's,
in purification, fact, damage buff, debuff,
RFP,
magical weapons.
Yeah, like, he's got it all. Yeah.
Signs importance feat.
Yes.
That also heals.
A speed buff for your warjacks.
And your infantry. And separate rules.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he doesn't really have a speed buff for his infantry, which I noticed was his big problem, but...
Sorry?
No, he doesn't. His feet doesn't do it.
His feet doesn't, but... no, wait. It's def and strength. Sorry,
which
that's my fault.
Which was actually going into it, like, because I basically was like, I'm pretty set on this lock list. It's kind of like basically riding a bike again, and that bike is Karchev. I had a lot of experience with running Warpath casters, so I thought, okay, this isn't too bad. Sinestro was the weirder one, because I pretty much... I took a look at a couple of lists, and I ended up settling on a build which has a Liberator and two Vindicators, and then the minimum unit of Trances, which is, of course, 4, because I don't know why you'd play less than 4. Those models are pretty much the reason I'd even play Crucible Guard. And then I picked the Rocketmen and the Halberds, and then I had a unit of Stormtroopers, but that whole thing we said about me Frankensteining a bunch of lists comes back to bite me. It turns out the guy I was borrowing the Stormtroopers with didn't have them, so I basically had to grab a battle engine from him instead, which isn't too bad. It's just a bit of, like... It's a bit all or nothing with the battle engine, the Railless Interceptor.
It's either amazing or garbage.
And if you lose it, you lose it all in one go, which was annoying because I actually quite like having Sinestro having a late-game revive target from the times I've played him with Assault Troopers. Another thing I noticed when playing him is that no threat extender of infantry is really annoying, but it does mean your infantry good second waves. Anyway, yeah, I mucked around with that, and I didn't really, like, mind how I do in CanCon, to be honest. I basically was going through a bunch of other different shit at the time, and I thought, this would be a nice, you know, let's just take this CanCon easy, make it a nice, like, weekend with friends, and see how we go. But the big one I noticed when I was playing it, practicing up, is that Sinestro is a really nice and complicated caster, and thus, when... several times on top of 2, I was like, well, Sinestro, I guess, camps 5 and does this cloud thing, even though my opponent is playing Dreamer, because he has no relevant things to contribute, because my opponent hasn't killed any models, and I don't have an Arc Node. I'm like, okay, first thing I'm doing is adding an Arc Node. So I did. And my round 1 was against Luke Henry, one of your mates from Victoria, actually.
My boy.
Yep. Unfortunately, your boy was playing Satixis Raiders into me, and I remembered to take an Arc Node, which meant I had Transmute, which was incredibly horrible for him in so many ways.
My poor boy.
It turns out that Satixis Raiders that get transmuted get obliterated by sprays and just everything. It was pretty bad.
-2 strength.
-2 speed, no Pathfinder.
No, it's not minus speed. We talked about this.
-2 strength,
def, and strength, and no Pathfinder. So all day sadness.
Yeah, like the rail.
Very miserable.
The Railist just fucking went berserk. And that was one of the games where the Railist was super value. In fact, every game was either the Railist was amazing or just trash. Because the second game, I played against my old captain, Batesy, and Batesy was playing, he was playing Grimkin, actually. He had a slightly different, he had a slightly different list to yours for Dreamer. He had a Rattler in there. I can't remember how he got that in, but...
Yeah, I think he drops, what was it?
I'm going to say he dropped...
third Cage Rager.
Yeah.
For a fourth Gorehound and the Rattler.
I think that's what happened. Yeah. I know it was rather similar, but he had the Rattler in there. That one was... Do you know that Dreamer has Abyssal Gate?
Yes.
Well, I didn't. I forgot.
I got so much value out of it this weekend after not really ever using it. It was a pretty clutch spell.
So I lost my fucking Railist to that thing, which was really annoying. But then... this one was just super grindy, as every game with Batesy always is, including every game in different game systems. Like, I played him on Judgment on the Sunday... And despite this being like, oh, you know, it's a casual game, we're gonna help our mate Jeff out, and we're gonna, you know, just play a nice, relaxing game, we ended up having to look up the death clock rules because it was just going down to the wire. Fuck a lot of you, Bates, but you never make it easy for me. And in this game, it was a very similar deal. The big one, I'll say, just in brief synopsis mode, is that on my feet turn, I had an option between overextending, possibly dying, but getting one Vindicator onto his death knell and probably killing it with Transmute. And then I think I could have picked up his Cage Rager he gave for me. He actually triggered all four down, and for the first time ever, I saw that Arcana be good. Because it turns out Crucible Guard heavies do not have steady, and it was super annoying.
I don't think I used that all weekend.
Yeah, well, most of the... I completely forgot she... Like, I literally wrote it on cards that, you know, he had Sacrifice, obviously. I think his second one was... It wasn't Ruin. It was Pandemonium. That's what it was.
Remind me to talk about the god tier that is Ill Omens when it gets back to me.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think that's... Well, I got told bits about that. Anyhow, yeah, I just decided, why not? Let's, I grind this one out. But I decided not to go for the overextend. I just took the Cage Rager and the Gorehound that had killed my Relis Interceptor and left the, Battle Engine alone. And eventually, there was a lot of decision points in that game. I can't really go into it in full because it was basically... Like, after the game ended, I lost that one to just, like, sheer grind, and then I just decided, fuck, I'll just clock at this point, because that's kind of how we were. Yeah, it was just a huge, like, the big one was I didn't go for that death knell, so I eventually had to kill it later, but without heavies. And Batesy all game, like, part of this was a misplay. I ran my halberds as a flank. And I think that was a mistake in the end, because he never really gave me any good targets. I mean, the one turn they could have got in and charged under Dr. Hilther's feet and all that other shit, he basically popped Pandemonium, and very obviously he did, because that was the one thing Dream was doing, was making sure she was in range to Pandemonium the Steelheads. Yep. But yeah, it was just... I basically got ground out of that one, and it was one of the things I noticed was... Dreamer is, again, like Trolls, but she also has a bunch of other random tricks. Like
control effects.
Control effects, which is really strong. Anyway, third round, I played against, Jack Davenport, and he's a Kador player from South Australia.
Yeah.
And
South Australia, yeah.
Unfortunately, that meant that I knew everything his army did, because he was playing Sorcha 3. I knew all the ways I've hated losing games as Kador to random bullshit. So, like... He Vindicated with his Devacore and cast Iron Flesh on them, and the other end, he had, like, some Shock Troopers moving up. So, I killed his entire unit of Devacore by purifying Iron Flesh, and then on the other side, I had Hutchuck and Anastasia ambush in and kill his Manowar Kovnik, because if I've ever played games as Manowar, and that thing's happened to me, I've always fucking hated it, so I decided to take it out on someone else.
Why is your Manowar ever on the side of the table?
The Kovnik...
Mine's always, like, dead center at the back of the army going, what the fuck, guys?
I think he had two, and he didn't... Well, yeah, he basically, I think, because he had two, he just might have autopiloted a bit. It was kind of, like, it was pretty bad.
I'm like, be in the center!
The important thing that game was that I had a Hero Trancer who survived Artanis, a Draken, and a Strike Tanker, and was set on fire by some fire terrain, and that survived all of that. The point when Sorcha was... Sorcha herself. Sorcha walked in, tried to hit him in the face and failed. And, like, that's all pretty unlikely. But it came down to, well, Sorcha is right next to this Trance. I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to kill Sorcha. A, I could win on Scenario this turn. But B, look, Trancer mate, we're going to cure your cancer. You deserve it for that heroic effort. And the fourth game I actually played against one of our other WTC makes. It was the guy, one of the guys on the third team, Luke.
No, you played against Nick.
Nick, yeah, that's it.
Nick Owen?
Nick Owen, yeah.
Merc player.
Nick Owen played some janky lists at the WTC, which was kind of bad for me, because today he didn't play jank, he played Magnus 2 instead. Magnus 2,
play, Nick.
Turns out, is a caster. That was a game, I was up on attrition, but way down on clock, and the final scenario, as Matt just went into, was spread the net.
Affectionately known as Spread the Legs.
Spread Your Legs.
Oh, what did I plan to spread the net?
Yeah, how should I put it? I was, like, down to 3 minutes on my clock, and because of that kind of clock pressure, like, I basically had to use my Relis to stop myself losing on Scenario, because I had to stop myself losing on Scenario a lot that game. But I did
and
kill...
And by the way, for anyone who's never seen Loud Chris play, like, him under clock pressure is a beautiful sight, because there's just tokens and cards and dice and shit flying everywhere. His table is just this giant, like, rubbish tip, It's the most amazing thing watching him try to figure out and bring beauty to the chaos.
And in this case, this is the problem where this is one of the reasons I'm not really good at dropping into different factions, because I know what to do in Kador under this kind of clock pressure, especially with the lists I'm practiced with. But here I go with Sylvester, I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm low on clocks, so I better kill Magnus, and he's right fucking there. So Liberator runs up, and then I arc a Stygian Abyss and roll like 1-1-2. I'm like, fuck, this Arcanine shit's a bit overrated, eh? And then I just got like super tilted, and I'm like, God, do I go for a second Stygian? Because that was the free cost Stygian, or maybe I can. And then I'm like, nah, fuck it. We're just gonna, I guess, put Transmute on these halberds and kill your last heavy. Unfortunately, that wasn't the last heavy, because he also had fucking Ninja Pig, and in my just, like, I was just kind of tilted, I didn't cast Admo on myself, and I didn't, because I was totally out of range of Ninja Pig, because there was a Rellis in the way, and then when I ran the Rellis out of the way, Ninja Pig was like, I guess I just charge you.
Hi.
Now, to be fair, if he hadn't hit the crit knockdown on the first go, I probably would have been okay. He hit the crit knockdown on the first go, and I was definitely not okay. And thus was the end of my day two. Well, day one, I should say.
Last one was spread the legs?
Yeah, spread the legs.
Yeah.
What did I play in my last round?
Well, what did you play in your first round, Brian?
Okay,
so I was playing Scorn because, god damn it, as much as I hate to admit it, Crucible Guard just, like, fucking nearly kicked me out of the game. But I was just, like, losing games, and it was frustrating, and winning games, and I wasn't enjoying them, and I was just like, this whole game is just being really shit right now. And I was like, okay, either the game is shit, or I'm being shit, or I just really don't like this faction. And that's happened before for me, where I bought in, didn't like what I was playing, and then really regretted life. So then somebody's like, you know what you'd really like, Brian? Because I remember you liked playing Trolls in Mark II. And Trolls in Mark II gained this really dumb ability called Implacability on Doomy 3, where you're just like, you don't get to touch none of my shit. No slamming, no pushing, no moving, no anything.
That sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah, it is, because Scorn apparently just got that in their CID, which I didn't know because I didn't fucking read the Scorn CID. All I knew that they got an Extreme Gentleman, and I was like, oh man, that model's dumb.
Extreme Gentleman.
So I started looking at the rules in that list, and essentially they get even a better version of Implacability, because Implacability you can get around with like throws and stuff. No, immovable object is just, you don't get to play with my toys. You also don't really get to play with your own toys, because you can't push or move them in any way other than their own active movements. But you know what, I can accept that, because most of the things that I was playing with in that list anyway were just like, no, you don't do that anyway. So I was like, okay, acceptable. And then you just take Zaltu, who is just a dumb +5 feet, and I'm like, okay, this is acceptable. This is easy mode feet. You just throw things in face, and I don't have to really, like, learn the game really fast to do, like, slightly well. So I chose that, and then I'm like, okay, what else do I need to
do? Are you telling me that Dark Guidance condones Scorn as the easy mode option?
Oh, no, I chose these as casters that you could grow into, but at the beginning have some, like, flexibility and forgiveness. Like, have some,
forgivingness.
Yeah, have some, like, yield. So I chose to pair it with, like, Max 3, because I'm like, you know what's fun to play in Kador is playing Butcher 3. So let's just go with, like, the closest thing to Butcher 3 that they have in. And they also both play into Champions, which was the second day event. So I just chose two lists that I could learn and play for 2 days straight. So I played Zaltu Exalted. So that was Zaltu, Sentinel, double Extreme Gentleman, double Immortals with UA, double Ancestral Guardian, one Hakar, one Novitiate, one Soul Vessel, and one Abaddon, the Keeper, and I believe, and a Gobber Chef, because I had a point left over.
What did we end up calling Abaddon? We had
Abaddon. Dabaddon?
Dabaddon, that's it.
I still don't think that's a very easy conversion. Anyway, so yes, Dabaddon. So I just pretty much put that list together, played it for like maybe a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks before, like, in terms of games. My first round opponent, so this is going to be bad because I've played, like, the same, like, two lists for, like, 8 games in a row, and I'm really tired right now, so I don't think I'm going to remember some of these in their correct orders. So my first round I remember because I played Circle first game twice in a row.
Right.
And I was playing again Trent Phelps, and Trent Phelps was playing Cro-Mac 2, double Storm Raptor, and I'm like, okay, this seems good for me. So, again, I'm still, like, not super comfortable with the list, so I don't know what to do. So, basically, we both run forward, and then I run forward and I feet. And I just pretty much put my entire army in front of me. I'm camping 3. I'm armor 23. I'm like, okay, let's see how this goes. But at some point, I didn't really have much else to do because I wasn't making attacks or anything. So, Zaltu didn't need to use transference. So, I had too much fury on the table, so I dropped 2 fury, which was essentially what killed me. So basically, Trent's just like, okay, I'm just going to throw my entire army attack rolls into your caster and see what happens. I essentially died on the last attack roll, and there was a couple things I could have done that could have, you know, saved me. One is I could have kept the novitiate within 6 inches of my caster, which would have accidentally made me win a game with a tough roll. That is not what happened, though. The other thing is, when I dropped the 2 Fury, I could have just camped them if I thought he was going for the assassination, which I should have probably guessed based on the fact his army would have a very hard time cracking the amount of armor I put in front of him.
Yeah.
So I should have just camped. But the other thing I could have done is use that 2 Fury, and instead of keeping vision up on one of my extreme guardians, is move it back to myself, which means I can just go, okay, cancel this damage roll. So if I ever thought he was going to hit me with a very particularly powerful attack after he's used some focus to boost it, I could just go no damage from this attack.
Mm.
The problem is you can't really see the damage rolls because you do it when they declare that they're going to roll it. Yeah. So the problem was with this entire assassination is he rolled a 15 on his damage roll with one of the birds, which did 8 damage to Zol. Which pretty much is like, do you take it? Do you transfer it now? But you knew that he was probably going to get a Getarix onto me. Essentially, the game came down to Getarix's last attack killing me. So it could have gone my way had something, but that spike early on in the game really just kind of drove it past, like, survival. Which is a shame. So that was by round 1. Okay, so now here's where my games get, like, wibbly-wobbly. I don't know what's going on. I'm really tired right now, and I already have bad memory to go with. So essentially my next game came down to, I believe, I played into a Legion player. No, I played into a Troll player. And this Troll player was actually pretty good. I can't remember people's names. I'm sorry. I'm a terrible person. Please forgive me. He seemed like he was, like, pretty, like, solid. He was like, I want to get good at this game. So he's been practicing on clock. He's been practicing, like, this is maintenance phase. This is a control phase. Like, I was like, he was going through it in his head and he was explaining it to me. And I'm like, okay, cool. It was at that point where you're like, you're trying to learn everything, like, down pat, where most people who have played the game long enough are just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It's all in this kind of, like, wibbly-wobbly phase that only matters sometimes, and the rest of the time people are just willing to, like, take your word for it. And that's kind of, like, how I was seeing this game. He obviously had practiced really hard. Essentially, it came down... I think he was a Victorian, because Potsy came to watch his game at the end. Basically, he was winning on clock. So he was winning on clock. My caster was pretty far forward. I was playing Zaltu again. And he's like... And I was camping a few. And he looks at it and he's like, I'm just going to kill your caster. And Potsy just, like, shakes his head. He goes for the kill. He's playing Colgrimus, so he tries to spray me to death. And I just, like, cancel spell because the Ancestor Guardian next to me has 3 souls. And he just... His face drops and I'm just like, I'm sorry. And by that time...
The Extreme Guardian.
Yeah, sorry, the Extreme Guardian. So the Extreme Guardian cancels the spell. He realizes his assassination attempt is very, very foolish. And then basically he runs out of time because we were both fairly short on time, but the assassination he thought would push him over the edge. And at that point, him pushing me out on time was not possible because if he went for this assassination. So I don't think he'd make that mistake in the future. And as a player who's learning or trying to get good, this is the kind of mistake you'll make. And I've done it in the past, and you'll just eventually learn this is the win condition, stay the course, you'll do fine. And I believe next time you'd just crush me.
Mm. I mean, Affliction versus Zol is...
Yeah, that was not fun.
Yeah, that definitely wouldn't be fun, no.
Death 13 was still a little annoying,
mm.
So that was worth putting up most turns. He had some chance. He was playing double Storm of the North, I think, so I had to worry about bears. That was pretty bad for me. They ambushed on. They didn't take anything too valuable, but they took, like, a bug and a solo or two, which was a little irritating. But then basically after that, they were less of an issue because my remaining Extreme Guardians just turned around and just played with some bears for a while.
Hmm.
And then the rest of my, like, nothing, like, I had, like, a couple of mortals, like, play with the remaining bear that toughed one roll. I don't know. I don't think it's bad, but I gave him, like, ambush targets that I really, really could have avoided, so that was bad on my part, because I completely forget bears exist, which is, you know, karma, because that's what I did to somebody else last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was karma. Round three was against someone. I had it in my brain earlier. Originally, I thought I had all four games mapped out, and now I'm pretty sure I've got two.
Great radio, everyone.
Oh, God. I played
Ryan,
against...
Ryan was really chaos-based opponent. That's what I'm taking away from this.
Did you
hit it? No. Okay. So I played into Kador, and I was playing against Old Witch 2. And we were playing on the scenario which has... two circle zones left and right of a horizontal...
Oh, it was Titty Fuck. Sorry, I can't remember its real name.
Okay, sure. I was trying not to say that, but okay. Essentially, I was playing into Doom Reavers and Old Witch 2.
Oh, wait, I know. You were playing into...
I saw this game.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun for me, because I actually got to drop Makeda 3, because I'm just like, look at all these dudes, and I'm pretty sure my Immortals want nothing to do with them.
Yep.
So Makeda, so he pretty much runs forward, I run a little farther up, and then he's got his, like, army in my face, but not quite in my face, so I'm just like, okay, this settle's gonna phrase a few guys, these models are gonna do a few things, and then Makeda's just gonna walk up and just, like, so the center zone has, like, a rock in the center, and essentially he's just got, like, models, like, mobbing it, and I'm just like, let's see what this does, and so Makeda feats, and then just, like, Pac-Mans her way around the zone, up near his caster, but not like, I don't have enough focus, so I'm not even going to worth doing this, because he's camping some. And then back around the rock, down the middle zone, and then, like, after killing something like 10 to 15 Doom Reavers, give or take a few, probably, like, between 15... I don't know. It's hard to tell. I should have counted. And then repoed back to the exact spot she started. And so I'm like, okay. And if I had done the next turn following up more efficiently, because essentially ran more Doom Reavers, killed some stuff, and I was just like, okay, what do I do? I had more games of Zol than I had with Makeda at that point, and I was not sure how to play this game. So I spent a lot of the time in the tank the following turn, where I should have much less models, and I should be prioritizing more targets, and because I was not doing those effectively, I wasted a lot of time in the tank in the following turn, which essentially brought me to a clock loss at the end of that game.
Damn, especially with that Makeda...
Yeah, but he still had so many Doom Reavers, and the problem with this list is, if I played it again, I'm sure I could play it against Chris if I wanted to, and we'd get games in. I think the Makeda list has game into it, because you have two models that are quite mobile, capable of killing a dozen models on free turn, and then running away to relative safety, give or take some. But if you get time was an issue. But I don't think it's like 100% Makeda's way. I think it's like 50-50, 60-40.
Oh, I can say from experience, it really comes down to just how much Makeda eats on her feet turn, and whether she gets to Old Witch in the process. Because if she does...
And I needed to remember to, like, Mortar Surge my Makeda before she went out, because, of course, the first roll she made was, like, a double one, and I was like, fucking okay, here we go. I didn't need to... It didn't matter, because I was, like, rolling armor, like, Power Strength 17 Grievous Wounds attacks at mat 10, so I needed, like, threes to hit, and... no dice to kill, so any Doom Reaver I essentially touched just exploded, and I got Fury back, or taken off, whatever mattered. And then my fourth round, I honestly don't remember, it was in Spread the Net, so because I had lost my I lost my first and third games, and I had won my second game, I must have won my fourth game. But I honestly cannot remember what it was. There's a couple potential people that it could have been. So I'm going to go with I played into a Thags 2 Primal Terrors list, and yes, this is a Thags 2 Primal Terrors list that had no Warmongers in it. So, you can already see we're in a good place. So I played Zol 2 into it.
That might have been in Victorian guy. Was his name Scott? Tall guy? Like, real tall guy?
Like, again, Rickling, my memory is, like, fucked.
So yeah, there's a Victorian guy who plays Thags 2 with double spears, I think.
No, there's no warmongers, no spears. There was only beasts.
Primal Terrors?
I'm not even lying.
Okay, no, that's
not true. You know what? To protect the innocent?
Like, again, I don't want to go into the details too much about it, but essentially he, like, came forward with Thags, and an Ancestral Guardian, an Extreme Guardian killed him.
Yeah.
Cool.
Because he tried to kill something with Thags, came forward, and then didn't run away with whatever powers he had that did it. And I probably could have killed most of the beasts in his list with even less, with no effort, because they were all four forward, and I don't, like, it was not a good game for him, I don't think, into this particular list, but I also don't think he was utilizing the strengths of the Thags list that exists. It was a fun game, he was an awesome guy, and I wish I could say more about it, but essentially it just came down to I had a long attrition game that would have just gone to me killing beasts every turn, or it was just I kill Thags immediately because he was within threat range. So that's what I did.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty sure that's how that game ended. But he was a cool guy. We talked a bit, but it was the end of the day and everyone was tired, so it was just time to go home and sleep.
Yeah.
See who made top four. Wasn't me.
Yes.
I went 2-2.
I believe after that, we decided all to go do a CanCon tradition, which was we went to Dixon Dumpling House. And
Dumplings!
I didn't. I had Thai.
Yes.
Because dumplings are disgusting.
I'm so sorry about that. For listeners who aren't aware, the one time Brian went to Dixon Dumpling House with us and got massive food poisoning.
So I spent the entirety of a WinterCon second day huddled in a corner of the convention just like, when are we leaving? I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, Brian, are you all right? I'm like, no, don't talk to him. I vomit.
It was truly terrible. And I, so like, this WinterCon, I was basically like, well, look, for War Machine-wise, kind of don't really care. It was like, I actually dropped out of champs / caster draft anyway. And I ended up playing Judgment with, which was a game that, well, we've actually had Andrew Galea on this cast to basically talk over, but rewinding a bit, I got driven down to Canberra with Colin, and Colin is basically, I think, the current, like, champion of Judgment. I think he won, like, this year's whatever the equivalent of the Super Series is. So he was helping me come up with lists for this Judgment thing, and I decided, you know what? All right, look, Colin, these are my favorite heroes. Make a good comp that goes with them. For anyone who isn't aware, Judgment is kind of like a MOBA style of...
Arena game.
So the tournament this time was 5v5, kind of like...
Was there pick and ban?
Correct, there was pick and ban.
So you choose seven characters... you pick one, they ban one. You pick one, they ban one, essentially. So you end up with five of your seven.
They ban one, and then you pick up the rating.
So whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I don't play this game.
Well, it's interesting. I haven't played it in a while, so when I played it, I was pleasantly surprised with how well I was doing. Especially, as I said, I got a round two matchup rematch against Batesy, which went down to the goddamn wire. He, under clock pressure, because, like, between the two of us, we had 4 minutes left on our clocks. I had one, he had three. I just went, look, you know what? I basically had Brock, who is something like a Dwarf Slayer, effectively man-mode it and then kill his effigy, which was really fucking nice. And that was my round two. And I went undefeated and came second, which turns out was not the first time I did this. But all up, I was just like, I was quite happy to just, like, do well, and Judgment has some fucking amazing models. But that's not really War Machine, so I guess we'll go into Brian if you've got time or can remember. What did you do on the Saturday?
Well, I got I was like, okay, I'm pretty confident in most circle games. I played into some of the ones that I found more challenging, but I hadn't really got into any practice with Iona. And so, round one, champions, Ben Swallow, member of team,
Quokka.
He's like, just one listing Iona. And I'm just like, fucking Christ. Okay, here we go. So he's got Iona. I'm like, I have no idea what to drop into this. So I pretty much just... And it's spread the legs. It's still spread the legs.
I don't know. I was
must have been.
Yeah, I didn't play Champions either, so I don't know.
Well, Hato just left whatever the last scenario was.
No, 100% was spread the net, yeah.
So I ended up playing into that. Basically, it went exactly how I thought. The attrition, like, advantage that that list provides is disgusting. I played Makeda 3 into it, which I don't know if it was correct or not. And Jack walks by my table, is like, you made the wrong choice. And I'm like, okay, great. Now I get to live with that for the rest of the game. So I lost that game. Ben played a great game. He's always fun to hang out and talk with. I always like to talk Child Dojo, because he's also a Child fan from Grimkin. So I can always appreciate that. So we talked a bit of Grimkin after that. And then I got into my round two, which I'm pretty sure I had on the tip of my tongue about 5 seconds ago. I've already forgotten. No, so I got paired into, I believe, a gentleman, and I'm going to forget names, except that it's pretty easy names for this round, because I'm pretty sure I played against, like, two or three Camerons, or Cams, surprisingly or not, so I don't remember which ones are which.
All right, look, just what did you play into? What?
Sorcha 3.
Sorcha 3.
So oh, I got wait, to play that... into Sorcha 3.
That wasn't, like, a guy from South Australia, was it? The same one I played into?
Jack? No, again, his name was... I know
Cameron, all right.
I'm pretty sure his name was Cam of some sort. And if I'm wrong, I apologize, because, again, I have the shittiest fucking memory, and I need to talk to somebody, like, 10 times before names, like, stick in my head. There are people I work with at work who I speak to on a regular basis who I still have a hard time remembering, and it's awful. So I just keep pretending, yes, I know who you are, the person who regularly says my name when they greet me. Anyway, so we'll move on. He played a Sorcha 3 game. I dropped... what's it called? I dropped Zaltu. That game was grindy. Basically, though, I was able to draw out his heavies, which allowed me to get a little bit up on attrition. I was able to use the AoE mage site from Zaltu to get around clouds and forest to spray into his living models. So I was just like rolling bananas. Oh, that's the thing I have to mention. Every game I played against PT. Twice in this tournament. Once was the PT list you forgot, but they brought the most important model, which is not Warmongers, it's fucking Hellmouths. They brought Hellmouths in every list I played against that was Legion, and every list I at least one shot one Hellmouth off the table with a Sentinel.
Oh, nice.
Because those beautiful. Models are fucking amazing.
Beautiful.
So, back to the game. Basically, with the use of Mage Sight and the Ancestral, the Extreme Guardians, I was able to just keep his models away from my big ones, and then when they went in, they just slaughtered pretty much anything that was in the way.
Yeah.
So that was a good, fun game. It was interesting, but I had played against Sorcha 3 a couple times in the past, so I kind of knew what I was looking for and should be expecting. I did forget that she had the most important rule, which is flank Warjacks. So the Warjacks get flank on Manowar models, but it was my feet turn, so my models stayed alive. Right. Good to remember. But yeah. No, she's an interesting, fun caster, but she just feels like she's missing just a little something that could, like,
push
her
problem
over.
Is actually, I'll be honest, after playing Sorcha a bunch, her main problem is that everyone hates on clouds, so her feet is much more impacted.
Well,
it feels
my
like
Immortals can't pass through them, so that's why I had to rely on my sprays.
Yeah.
But because he's playing this brick, that brick was like, and because of the way the table was, it kind of, like, all clumped together on his feet turn.
Yeah, that
and
is...
And so, basically, my sprays were just money, where I was spraying, like, 6 to 7 dudes a turn.
Ugh,
and while the armor... On. And while the armor 23 shock troopers took several turns to whittle down, except for a couple spikes here and there, the guys behind them, the demo core, were just dying.
Yeah.
Because it was really hard for them not to die to POW 14 Weapon Master sprays.
Oh, yeah. Like, you see the problem with Sorcha. I mean, everyone has a Cloud War answer in some respect. You kind of need to. This is
yeah, her feed's a little lackluster, which is a real shame. But I also remember Arian played against, I think, the same opponent earlier the day prior.
Yeah.
And Arian was just like, she's Def 16!
She kind of does randomly jump between Def 12 and Def 16 on just like a moment's notice. For my part, I have a lot of fun with her, but I think her main problem is that she runs Manowar as a brick, and if I'm playing Manowar, I'd rather Manowar are already excellent at bricking. They kind of don't need more help with that. But the fact that her Warjacks have flight means they pretty much destroy
She has
her.
Pretty destructive.
They just kind of destroy whatever they touch.
I was just lucky that I was able to, like,
you had your feet, so your feet helps
yeah,
him.
Yeah, my feet allowed me to walk into it a little bit, and I was able to get ahead by taking out, like, the Marauder early.
Yes.
And the Marauder was going to be a problem. Luckily, some other models I used as bait were able to, like, take the brunt of that, and then I was able to remove them.
Yeah.
Turns out POW 13s, even with, like, free boosts from Transference, are not great at fighting Armor 20 Jacks, though. So there was a couple times where I just barely managed to kill something with some attacks that I had, only because I had boosts available, but all my POW 13s were like, yeah, this is, like, 3 or 4 damage on average, which is not a lot against these heavies. So luckily I had some pre-guardians to take down, like, some really important models, and I had just some lucky rolls when I needed to. It was a good game. I enjoyed it. Third game I lost, which was against the PT player who was playing... What's his name?
Animag?
Nope.
Callus?
Yes. Callus.
Oh, did you play Cameron from Tasmania?
Yes, I played against Cameron. Yes. So he had double birds, he had double warmongers, he had a blightbringer, and he had the... three-man calf unit. Well, it's five-man sometimes. He had min unit of chosen. Yeah. Basically, we played on Mirage. So this was like a scenario game. So this is a game that, again, on attrition, I was pretty okay with, and I was doing quite well. But he got an early scenario start, which pushed me to have to play the scenario game long-term. And because he got this lead and he had models that he could just throw forward to contest my stuff, it was really hard to catch up. So over many turns, he was able to pull out a scenario win, and he played a very good game, and I quite enjoyed it. But what I learned in that game, and the one thing that I really enjoyed about this CanCon, was playing this new faction, I was learning new things about the faction, especially how dumb extreme gentlemen are. So the extreme gentlemen I learned at this time, and it was a little too late to it matter, but I could have been probably doing it all day, because my supreme gentlemen weren't important for attrition as much. I was randomly throwing fireweaves into stuff, so just doing extra damage, killing extra models, re-killing models from feet turn. But they were just absorbing souls and not really doing much with them, just returning guys, which is really annoying for him and pretty good for me. But what I didn't, what I failed to do was, the thing is, the way they place guys back in units is retarded. So what you can do is, within 3 inches of any model in the unit that you want to place the guy back into, just has to be within 10 inches of the command range of the Supreme Gentleman. So my Supreme Gentleman should have been standing almost exactly 10 inches, just within 10 inches of his zones, and just dropping guys into the zone every turn to stop him from scoring, which I only started doing at the very end of the game when I realized how broken that rule is. So I could have just been returning.
Because he also can move and then do it.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
He can just do it at any time during his activation. So I should have just been every turn repositioning, shooting an AoE, and just throwing three guys into his zone. And if I had been doing that on game, the scenario game would have been a lot more recoverable, where it was had been gotten out of hand really early.
Yeah.
So that was a really interesting game. I think if we played it again, it could go either way still. PT still has some really good tech into it. But with Abaddon's shield guard, I was able to pretty much control where he put that AoE. So when he went for my Supreme Guardians to do some extra damage, I was able to shield guard it and play and change his plans pretty crazily, because he thought if he put a couple models in, he would be able to do enough damage to probably kill it. But as soon as I take away his damage buff from his from the Blightbringer, it became pretty much like pointless to do.
Yeah. Plus, also, like, the Supreme Guardian generally kills a guy on the way in, because for some reason that model has defensive strike. I don't know why.
Yeah. Yeah. That model has just so many rules. People are just like, why does it have that rule? Why?
The model.
And I'm just like, because it's fucking extreme.
Extreme rules.
The extreme gentleman.
All right, that's enough of a loser talk.
And there's like one more round that I won that I honestly don't remember. I feel bad for whoever I played against, but like I was tired. And I'm tired now, so I apologize. It was a fun game. I didn't have any bad games this weekend. Games I won, games I lost, I enjoyed them all, and I had a great time. So if you did play against me and you do listen to this, I hope I really enjoyed any game I played against you, because it was a great CanCon and would do again.
Yes, 10 out of 10 would
do. Oh, so game ends, and then best thing ever happens. So Hato, who's the bestest organizer ever, who's been running CanCon and WinterCon on and off for the past 5 years. He's run CanCon every year, but he ran WinterCon on and off depending on his availability. Has been one of the best, like, fucking War Machine organizers who pretty much does all the work for the event. He has some help, and they're awesome guys, too. He's retiring from the event of this year. It was his last go. So leading up to the event, Hato put up some pictures of him setting up, and Hato grew this like majestic fucking red beard. He looked like a fucking Viking. It was fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But I don't know what did it, but Frawley thought it was a fucking funny idea to just shave his head, and Hato said yes. So between the end of Champions and then leading up to the
Masters
leading
final.
Up to the Fat Masters final that Hickling was drinking prior to,
I'll get to that.
We spent Hickling spent 27 minutes recording the attempt of Frawley and Rosie to shave one man's head.
In the words of Tom, Tom Oliver, it was they bought the bestest, most $20est clippers for this attempt. And then they spent the rest of the money on chopper chops. So when I said, I was at Judgment of the Day, and then when I come back and find that there's basically a giant trough of chopper chops, they've seemingly appeared for no reason whatsoever. And then they're pulling out this dinky pair of clippers. I'm like, oh, okay, so I see where all the money actually got spent.
That was the most expensive pair of clippers that that store had.
Yeah, that was the
worst. In their defense, apparently.
Apparently. I can't say I'm that surprised. But those things were as blunt as, well, basically a rusty pair of garden shears, and that's kind of what it was.
Anyway, Hato put up with us.
If you want to watch the actual clip of it, it's on YouTube. I've uploaded it to YouTube. It's called
Hate Us.
We'll
link it with this episode because God knows why not. You can get more views, and frankly, the clip is absolutely hilarious.
It's also on War Machine Awards at Australia.
Yeah.
But Hato was excellent. He put up with it. He's used to dealing with shitty nerds doing stupid things, and he let us do it one more time. And he ended up with an amazing haircut because now he just looks like some like Viking warrior guy with this like amazing beard and this like shaved head.
The funny thing with this
best
shaving,
regards Hato if he's actually listening.
Yeah, definitely. And the funniest thing with this like shaving story is that it basically the shaving went through three different times. It's basically like Frawley tried, and I remember watching like Hato wince repeatedly because the clippers were effectively not like cutting hair so much as just ripping it out. Yeah, good call. So like Rosie took over and was like, all right, look, just let me do this. And
slightly better.
Rosie did better with what he had. Like, Rosie knows how to cut hair. And then Whaley, who A, is bald, and B, routinely shaves his head, and C, has real clippers, finished the job off and made, like, Hato look super presentable.
Like, the next day.
The next day. Unfortunately for Hato, he had to do this the current day. So, about that. Who were the high meta opponents you had to play into the super serious Masters, Hickling, and what was your prep work for it?
Okay, we'll do the prep work first. So, leading up to the final, I knew that I didn't feel favoured into anyone, either in skill or in lists. And I do have a tendency to get nervous before big games like that, and so I thought, I've always played well either hungover or drunk. So off I went down to, I left the venue, went down to a pub about 2 hours before, had a pint, came back, and my boy Affy he had an esky of beers that he was pouring into a drink container so that we could get away, because you're not supposed to drink in the venue, so sorry if anyone from CanCon's listening to this. And so he gave me another beer, so I'm a pint and a stubby down, and find out that out of Arian, Cohen Hill, and Liam, I'm playing against Liam.
Captain Wobbegong.
My team captain from WTC, who's always routinely smashed me with Arcadius, but for the memes, wanted to drop Sturm and Drang. And look, to be honest, I think Sturm and Drang was a damn fine drop into me because he had... What did he have? He had a couple of Battle Boars. He had the Dracodile on the junior whose name I can never remember.
The new junior, Lord Undertroll or something? The guy
Undermire.
In the clouds. Undermire.
Meyer,
it,
something
yeah.
Meyer.
Yeah. He had Danger Noodle and he had Run and Lug.
I think he also had like Rorschach and Brine because you usually have Rorschach and Brine.
No.
I don't think he had Rorschach and Brine. I think I remember Ninja flying around.
He had two Pokemon and it was the snake and the bear.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So, for anyone who don't know, Sturm and Drang's feat is all war. Like, there's a Warjack version, but I don't know what it is.
It's all Warjacks can only be allocated one focus, or only have one focus.
And the war beasts have their fury stat reduced to 1.
Yep.
Which is terrifying because, like, if I've got a whole bunch of things that are half full and then he takes them down to 1, I think I can't transfer them into anything because they're full and, like, it's all this other chaos that goes on. And so when you've got a Dracodile, he's going to assault in and spray you and do all this other chaos. I'm like,
blind. It just
doesn't seem fun. So my plan was to leave some Skinner Moans back a bit, with one of them with Mirage, so I could, like, maybe be out of the feet and or force him to come a bit more forwards than he wants. I also didn't have a way to get rid of upkeeps, so I took Ruin instead of Sacrifice, I think. Mm-hmm. I think I still took Ill Omens, because Ill Omens was just money the entire tournament. No greater arcana has ever existed, especially for Dreamer, when you can put out Phantasms and Gremlin Storms getting people's way. So if they kill them early in the turn, it's just it's a cumulative value of -1 to attack and damage rolls is just massive. So he also had Orin, Midwinter, and Eilish in there. So I didn't think I was going to get any value out of Enfeeble, which is one of the ways that I sort of tank up and not lose too much in an alpha. So overall, I was just a bit nervous about the whole thing.
A bit nervous about Sturm and Drain.
A bit nervous about Sturm and Drain, yes. I know it doesn't sound right, but it's... And Liam's an amazing player. He's got a blog. I don't know what it is, but he was taking great photos with his SLR and he does good write-ups. So I could probably he'll do this report more justice than I did. Well, I'm about to. So I ran up. He ran up. I managed to almost kill a battle boar on one flank with the Gorehounds. The other Gorehound just sort of ran around. I positioned ready to take the charge. Forgot that one of the bits of terrain was, in fact, rubble and not a building. So I thought I was blocked off from a landing zone from the Dracodile there when I wasn't. So that was a bit of a stuff up. So he's coming. Now, I put Enfeeble on the Dracodile and both of us misplayed here. So I, for some reason, despite having Eilish in some of my lists, thought that his upkeep removal was a target. And so I was going to use Ruin to stop it from happening so I could keep Enfeeble on there and also knock off just Haunting, whatever the Melody thing is that Dahlia has that means you can't attack her because I had nothing that could kill Dahlia. And he forgot that I'd put Enfeeble up altogether. So when he went to use Eilish to put Puppet Master on the Dracodile, I was very confused and when I thought you were going to try and take off the Enfeeble, and at which point he realised he'd forgotten Enfeeble. And so what I did was I used Ruin to force him to cast Primal twice, and then that also knocked off the Haunting Melody.
Ooh.
But the problem was he managed to catch everyone in the feet. And so he's charged Dracodile in. I think he killed... He only killed one or two Cage Rangers. I'm not sure which. Like, the Danger Noodle came in as well, did some stuff. Luckily, I had Mirage on the Skinner Moans I had back because he had to shake blind, but with Mirage, he was within walking distance. And he must have come... He must have come in with the Dracodile first, and then I put Enfeeble on it, come up and done some damage to it. That's right. And then I killed the Danger Noodle. At some point, a large Phantasm also blew up and took off because Dahlia had put back up Haunting Melody and I took it back off again. So I killed the Danger Noodle, did all this stuff, and he finally got Primal onto the Dracodile and needing sevens to hit a Skin and Moans, rolled about 5 sixes. And it was at this point... So that was like 2 or 3 turns it took for that to happen, and that was the point where I went, right, I've got... Instead of having, like, 1 heavy left, I've got 3 heavies left. And did a high. So I killed the Danger Noodle. I almost killed the Jackadole. Left it on 4 boxes. Looked around the table. Didn't have much else. Saw a Crabbit. And a Crabbit decided to charge the Jackadole.
Yes.
Hit the Jackadole. And under Manifest Destiny, at dice minus 12, needing to do 4 damage, rolled the 16 damage and killed a Jackadole.
Yes.
Turning it into a large Phantasm, which spent the rest of the game chasing Dahlia around. So at this point, Liam realised that, you know, he's way down on attrition. He can't really score much scenario points because I've got all these Phantasms and Gremlin Swarms running around the place. He sends in Lug. I think kills two heavies that were almost dead, but then I think the Cage Rager kills that. The Skin and Moans frenzies and leaves our hero Crabbit on one box. Then I do a bit more. He comes over with, I think it was Dragon Charge by now. It got to the point where he couldn't win on scenario. I was too far away for him to assassinate. So it was really just, he'd run out of options. And I could walk the Skin and Moans over and just kill him if I got Eilish out of the way. And so I healed the Crabbit and killed Eilish with the Crabbit.
Yes.
And walked over and killed Drang. So far our Crabbit hero has killed a Dracodile, face tanked the Skin and Moans, and enabled an assassination by killing Eilish. So keep track of that as we come into the last game. Because Colin Hill had beaten Arion, I think, turn two.
It was turn two or three. It was basically...
No, every game for Colin ended before, like, with the exception of one, ended by turn two.
This one was pretty funny because it was a case of Arion spent, who was playing Kruger 2, spent the entire game avoiding ways of dying to a random guy. A Ruler of the Feast randomly birding a model within 5 inches of Kruger and killing him, and then Colin just triggered Grail's feet and got Lord of the Feast.
Just charged Lord of the Feast into him because it's a 14-inch threat range.
Yeah.
So Arion had completely got so absorbed in the fucking bird threat that he completely missed the feet threat. And yeah, that's partially just inexperience with into Grail, and partially just tiredness.
Also,
it isn't
also even that. Like, sometimes, like, all you need to do is just a simple threat to just get them. I mean, for my part, I saw your game, Matt, after you'd been feeded on by Sturm and Drang, you had a fucking Dracodile in your face, and you were two heavies down more than you should be, and I'm like, alright, look, Jack, we're going to the casino. This looks like a complete write-off. I'm just going to see, like, Liam and Colin play in the final, I think. Because at that point, basically, I watched, like, Colin kill Arion, and then you basically looked like you were up shit creek without a paddle.
Yeah.
So imagine my surprise when, a couple hours later, when I'm playing poker, and you're actually, like, in the finals. And then... and then imagine my greatest surprise what followed. Please explain what happened.
Okay, so... because Colin's game had gone so quickly, he'd been sitting around for a while. Our game took forever. So I was really shaky by now. I had a third beer during that game.
Nerves beer, good choice.
Yeah, nerves beer. Thank you, Affy.
I'm actually kind of sad he isn't on because I wanted him on as well. He is truly a gentleman and a scholar.
Yeah. So Colin said, look, take as long as you need. So I went to the bathroom, had a couple of cigarettes, just, you know, unwound a bit. Colin and I both discussed the fact that he had one list of Grail to this point and I had one list of Dreamer to this point, and let's not beat around the bush and pretend we're going to drop anything else other than Dreamer versus Grail in the final. and look, it was mine and Colin's first game ever against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're probably two of the most table talky people out there.
There was so much
jokers
singing
during games.
Wait, singing?
There was so much singing.
There was singing.
Colin
there was jokes,
always
there was...
sings, and Hickling was just like, oh yeah, this I know this one, and would join right in. Colin loved fucking singing songs, and Hickling was like the perfect opponent.
Yeah, no, so like we were just slinging jokes back and forth. It was one of the most fun games I've ever had. But, what is happening?
That's an aircraft flying over us.
Great.
Great radio, I know, but yes.
Excellent. Okay,
continue.
So we get to the game, and it's Grail with Lord of the Feast and some other junk versus my Dreamer list. All I knew about this list, I hadn't played against the new Tharn, I'd barely looked at them, I knew roughly what they did. I knew without Iona's feats, he would struggle in the attrition, and just knowing Colin and the way he plays, it was either going to be a real scenario push, or he was just going to go face as often as possible. So, like, all I've done so far is just make sure the Dreamer isn't vulnerable and shove Cage Rangers forwards, and that hasn't let me down yet. So, first turn, I just run everything up, and I get Mirage into a Gorehound out on the left sorry, because it's the one with the two rectangles, two circles, right? So I don't know what scenario that is, but yeah, friendly and enemy rectangle and two neutral circles.
Emoji, standoff, that's it.
Sure. And so I'm just in my zone, happily pottering around. I walk Dreamer backwards, more than 3.5 inches away from everyone, making sure I can like walk into Killbox next turn. I'm about 6.5 inches off the edge of the table. I've got one Crabbit guarding my Death Nail. The other Crabbit's just off in the middle of nowhere because I really wanted Cohen to try and kill my Death Nail. If he failed at that, I've got a game. If he wins at that, I've kind of got a game, but I didn't have the mental capacity to deal with Lord of the Feast waiting to pounce onto Dreamer.
You wanted some bait, right?
Yeah, so he decides to go for it, and the maths is probably in his favour. He puts Puppet Master on the Lord of the Feast and gives it the Divine Inspiration. Is that the thing that gives it?
Yeah, Divine Inspiration. It's the one where he gets Signs of Importance for every
turn. Yeah. So he sends it in. He shoots the Death Nail. I shield guard it to the Crabbit. So he's got the Crabbit, a Skid and Moans, and the Death Nail in his melee range for the Thresher.
Yep.
And what he wants to do is kill the Crabbit so that way he can boost onto the Death Nail, get the cores back off the Crabbit, and then buy 4 more attacks on the Death Nail. So he swings on the Crabbit at, like, dice plus 4, I believe, doesn't kill it, uses Puppet Master, and doesn't kill it again. So now our Crabbit has killed a Dracodile, he's face-tanked a Skin and Moans, he's killed Iowish, and he's face-tanked a re-rolling Lord of the Feast with Storm Rager and full corpses.
Rip.
And because of that, Cohen leaves the Death Nail on somewhere between 5 and 8 boxes. Takes out the mind of the Skin and Moans, so I can't heal that, obviously, because of Grievous Wounds, because why doesn't he have every other rule in the book? I go and I sort of, at the start of my turn, I Mirage the Gorehound forward, and I've got a charge lane thanks to Ghostly onto Call. I don't manage to kill him. He toughs on my last attack, which is a little disappointing, but I tie up as many Blood Trackers as possible with another Gorehound. A third Gorehound goes out way on the right flank and engages two Tharn from a unit that are way out on the edge.
Yep.
And, yeah, sorry, this is this noise kicking off.
Oh, yeah, it's more aeroplanes.
Yeah. And then, like, the heavies just, like, punch some shit and basically get in the way. The Skin and Moans boosts with Manifest Destiny, so 3 dice drop the lowest, kills the Lord of the Feast, takes his corpse, and Dreamer just wanders up just within the kill box. Now, Colin uses the Tharn's Change of Prey thing. Instead of putting it on the Death Nail, he puts it on the Gorehound, because he's got about 5 or 6 of the girls engaged by the Gorehound, and about 4 that can get shots onto the Death Nail. So his plan was to kill the Gorehound and then transfer it onto the Death Nail and kill that.
Yeah.
But he didn't manage to... He forgot about Death March, which means he would have been hitting, but he didn't
realize factor it
2
in?
Turns later.
Right.
Okay. So yeah, he didn't factor the mat in from it. So he kept thinking he was missing by 1 or 2. We didn't realize till about 2, like a turn or 2 later, that he should have been hitting. So he didn't kill the Gorehounds, and which meant he couldn't transfer prey, which meant he only got the Death Nail down to 4 boxes. And so, yeah, I'm hanging on by the skin of my teeth here. I've got no real good way of healing the things. I don't have enough corpses onto it yet. So I decide to just trigger vengeance on as much stuff as I can. I trigger vengeance on every single unit. I create a phantasm for each unit. I get all of them within 14 of Dreamer. I've also got that Gorehound that should have been dead but still isn't, also within 14 of Dreamer. And I'm like, right, please vengeance and kill something and take all your clock doing it. And luckily he potters around, kills some stuff, and then eventually kills the Gorehound, which lets me trigger sacrifice, which lets me get the Death Nail back up to 4. Which lets me play a much happier game because I don't have to worry about somebody shooting it or some charge target getting onto it. And then he proceeds to take a really, really, really long turn. I've got enough stuff floating around that he can't really score easily. He can't get to Dreamer really to Assassinator. And so he's just trying to do enough damage, but he can't get past the armor 21 without any armor buffs.
Yep.
And so he kills like a gore hand or two. He kills some phantasms. He generally potters around. And he gets down to like 12 minutes or something like that. And they're like, right, this is great, because next turn I can really start to push out. I took out a lot of stuff. I took out... I started killing a whole bunch of stuff and really digging deep into his lines. Like,
okay, Dranger, almost... Started to get stuff like the Death Wolves and all that?
Yeah, so I killed the leader of the Death Wolves, so put the other one... So they were spread out so that one of them was now out of command. I almost pushed a Cage Ranger all the way into his rectangle. Everyone was still in the Death Knell's aura. Everything was going really, really good. And at the start of that turn, I'm like, right, this is the turn I know Colin's going to shovel, because if anyone's going to go for some bizarre shovel at the end of a game and pull it off, it's Colin. And I've been saving Wraithwalker for this exact moment. So at the start of the turn, I'm like, yep, Dreamer's going incorporeal, and Colin's like, oh, that's right, that's something she can do, and we had a laugh about that. And then I proceeded to then just sit on that, do my turn, end up with about 20 minutes to go, and ship to him. And he decides to start planning this big shovel, spends heaps of time putting it together, doing all this stuff, and I'm just sitting there trying to desperately keep a poker face throughout the whole thing. He kills a Phantasm early, so I trigger Ill Omens. So I'm like, this is a little bit of extra insurance against something that may happen, because he still did have the Pure Blood in his list, so he could have used a Pure Blood Animus if he'd remembered. But he had to, like, really stumble around and ended up throwing a Cage Rager at another Cage Rager, because he had to get one of them out the way to be able to get Grail into position, but he didn't want to kill the other one because they get transfers back, because I only had one transfer. So he was just slowly trying to piece all of this together. He gets down to, I don't know, maybe 4 minutes left. He finally moves Grail over with a couple of sidesteps and puts Storm Rager onto, I think, one of the Ravagers that was going to be able to charge me, because he basically could get two Blood Trackers and a Ravager against Dreamer, as far as he was concerned, sitting in Artifice of Deviation with just one transfer. So he keeps thinking about it, looks at this, looks at that, finally gets down to about a minute to go, says, yep, I'm going to charge my Blood Trackers in, places them next to me, and I've never been happier to just go, he picks up his dust, and I'm like, well, I'm incorporeal, and he's like, and she misses, and she wins. So...
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, and it was just, I actually teared up a bit when I won, because I mean, I've been playing for a long time, and I've never been, I've always been sort of a middle to upper middle tier player. And I just remember Colin spent about a minute talking about other stuff in the game, and I just looked up and everyone was looking around me. I'm like, I didn't hear a word anyone just said. I'm sorry. I was just so out of it after winning that. But, yeah, it was a great feeling. It was, great opponents and great games to get there.
Congrats, Hickling.
Yeah, congrats. Fucking congrats.
Thank you.
What? So I know that you spent the Monday, because it was a public holiday, basically taking it easy and just, like, basking in the adulteration.
Yeah, I also watched my boy Dave Garmery, Scottish Dave. He had reached Champions Finals.
Yeah.
So the Champions Finals, they cut before the end of Sunday, and they played at the start of, sort of about 11 o'clock Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched his first game, and he played against Robin and accidentally gave up a Mammoth quite early, and that was pretty much that. And then I just added the, because I had an 8-hour drive home after that, so kicked off the drive home.
Yeah. Well, I'll just be quick on my part, because, as I said, like, I kind of, oh God, why are there so many fucking planes? Alright. Well, for my part, as I said, like, this weekend for me was a lot of just, like, I was just taking it easy, which is one of the reasons I was playing Crystal Guard as well, because, annoyingly, immediately after fucking CanCon, like, 2 to 3 days after, all the Doom Rooter stuff I was waiting on dropped, so I'm like, yep, great, thank you, Privateer Press, you're the goddamn worst. But
usually it drops before CanCon, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but I think it was because of the ATC, they wanted to wait till afterwards, but, oh well. In this particular case, though, what happened, was I had... Like, Rose, I was borrowing models from a bunch of people. Brian was responsible for some of them, and then the other person was Matthew Rosie, who's from Newcastle. And unfortunately, his models got locked in the car with Collins, and by locked in the car, I mean the key for the car was also locked in there, so it was just a complete mess. I was really worried that, it would take 6 hours for them to get out. Thankfully, it wasn't that bad. But that meant that I'm like, well... I was actually going to borrow Rosie's circle because, you know, Iona seems like a good caster and probably good enough to one-list this, like, random steamroller we're doing. But I guess I'm playing this Crucible card. And so I had to cobble together some of, like, my jankier lists. I literally rocked up the first event, the first, like, two rounds with just one list, and that list was, like, Lock. Because I didn't have enough time to actually write a second list. And the Lock list I ended up writing because it turns out there was just a whole bunch of models I had to randomly borrow, had, like, two Vanguards in it, and I was happy to actually play them because it turns out Vanguards are quite good at their job. This tournament, I'll just be brief, I went three rounds. Eventually, by the end of the third round, by the end of the second round, I managed to write up and find models for a Baldwin list. And because I decided that, you know, if options the guy is so much of a constrainer in terms of list selection, I might as well see what happens if you don't write it with him and wrote Baldwin as my off-caster. And yeah, it was good fun. Basically, Locke, it turns out, is just really good into a lot of matchups because she's really good at punching other heavies to death and just outthreats pretty much anything, which is nice. Like, one of the things that was occurring to me all throughout this CanCon was what happens if I played the Batesy with Locke instead of Sylvestro, as I ended up doing. Because if I'd done that, I think I would have been in a much better spot. Because Locke feels like the kind of caster I'd want to play into someone like Dreamer. And even if it's not a build as, like, you know, refined and elegant as yours, Matt, it's still, like, Locke has a lot of things you want. I mean, end of the day, having six heavies play all against six heavies, but your heavies outthreat Dreamers, and you have a lot of stuff to deal with her bullshit, like, you know, a feat that dispels the Enfeeble, Jackhammer in case that comes up, and that sort of thing, is just really nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one went three rounds. That was only a three-round event. It was a nice, like, I don't know, icebreaker, so to speak, to end the CanCon with. And yeah, it was a fucking good event.
Yeah, it was a great CanCon. I want to thank all my opponents again. Again, I have a shitty memory, and I'm a shitty person, but you guys were all awesome.
Yeah, same.
And I'd like to just to point out the chalk and cheese between my plan to initially play every caster once throughout the three tournaments and play all this different stuff, and all I did was play six games, and all of them were with Dreamer, and they were just one tournament. Did not work out that way in the end, but it was such a great tournament, and yeah, I'm still buzzing now.
Oh, so. Man. I'm going to be honest, like, I'm going to blame you for my random losses at poker then, because I was doing quite well until I found out you'd won, and then I just felt the deepest regret I wasn't there. And now even worse, because I didn't realize it was so much singing. But seriously, I don't know how you pulled that fucking Sturm and Drang game out of the fucking dumpster fire where I left it, but I'm so glad you did.
It was just all because he forgot Enfeeble. Like, he just had one turn where he should have killed my entire list and he didn't kill anything, and so, yeah, that's that one simple mistake let me back in the game and smashed it from there.
Which I think is a Dreamer thing anyway, is that if you give her an inch, she will take a mile, and she'll make your models that you've given her an inch with into more fucking phantasms.
Yeah, and like, You're just always, you're just taking the punch and counter-punching. So you never get enough value on your alphas. Like, very rarely do I take an alpha so overpowering that I sit there and go, well, I can't come back from here. There's always usually some way back.
Mm, yeah. And you've got a lot of random bullshit to deal with people's things. Like, again, the game I lost was because of a very, very telegraphed pandemonium against my steelheads.
Mm.
Yeah. And then the game...
And that's something I do very differently, I think, to a lot of Dreamer players, that I don't like to get her up the table because I just get her accidentally killed. And I find that if I keep her safe and don't do dumb risks, then I can just grind it out. And Ill Omens is just way too good of a arcana that I don't really need to move far up the table, because I'm always going to take Sacrifice, maybe Ruin, but then even then it's usually models in my army I'm trying to protect.
Yeah.
So... I found that every time I've tried to use Pandemonium and Labyrinth that, like, I remember the one time I tried to use Pandemonium and then the unit just walked to me and killed me anyway. And I'm just like, oh, that was not my intent. So, yeah, because you have to be just so far at the table. So, yeah, definitely a big fan of Ill Omens and, yeah.
Pandemonium, I always have found, was really, like, in CID it was, like, ball-bustingly, like, oppressive. And now it's just, like, most people are just, like, trying to get rid of it because... it doesn't change their game plan much. So they usually try and bait it out and then go, okay, well, I planned for this the whole time, and it just always feels really shitty.
Yeah, it kind of does. Like, I think in that case it was very, very matchup targeted because, again, like the list I was playing for Crucible Guard was Rocketmen and Steelheads, and both of them are very dependent on orders.
Yeah, I could see that. But even with, like, shield wall units, sometimes they're just like, oh, okay, so I can't shield wall, so I'll just do something else.
Yeah, so I guess I'll just walk up, and a lot of casters can count for that. Speaking of which, I'd like to give my verdict on Crucible Guard, which is I think they're one of the best side bitch factions. I don't think at present you kind of want to be main decking them, though you certainly can, because I kind of like the fact that the faction is easy to get into, but a lot of the complexity is in the models themselves. Like, models like Suppressors and Trances are just very... There's a lot of hidden depth to them, but end of the day, you can just play them as they're simple. Well, the Suppressor walks up and sprays two things and puts, like, Rust and Ice Cage on something, or the Trancer just walks up and Mental Force slams a guy out of the zone, right? But a lot of the random complexity they have in model interaction is really quite nice. I wouldn't say I'd be really tempted to collect them or play them. Like, again, like, this kind of CanCon, I was borrowing them, and believe it or not, Wednesday I was more or less immediately back into Kador, because Wednesday for us was when the CID dropped. Again, rather annoying, but oh well.
I don't know, I feel like they have a lot of problems into the meta right now, because you're seeing so many anti-ranged lists.
Well, the real problem...
A lot of dominant casters.
Nah, the real problem they have is that their best, like, immediately after Crucible Guard sort of picked up was that fucking Wormwood has proven to be a
class.
Yeah,
but he's, like, the worst of the problem, but there's so many casters and so many factions now that just kind of dick them.
Yeah.
And, like, you can play around it, and I just was not enjoying doing that. I was... having problems, but
I will say,
just
one of the things
bad.
I really fucking loved going back to Kador was my fucking heavies not dying immediately to anything. In Kador, my heavies, like, I remember a couple of games where, especially the first game of the final day where I was playing Glenn, and he randomly killed one of my Tauros, a Tauro, not, like, a random shitty Suppressor or Vindicator, with just a Carnivian no buffs or something. He just rolled a little lucky, or even... semi-average. Like, I accounted for his Parasite because he was playing Lilith 1. I'm like, he was just like, bet you weren't expecting that. You're like, I said, like, you know what? No, I wasn't, because mentally speaking, I was thinking, oh, you know, on 20, it's basically a Kador heavy, or even just like a heavy.
Until you lose a shield.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. He ripped off the shield almost immediately. And that kind of thing, you know. That is one of the things with Crucible Guard, is that it's kind of... Their model that takes a punch is their Rocketmen, I'd say, and maybe their Steelheads. Steelheads, even, I'm not really that, like, trustworthy of their ability to actually take a punch, because they're only def 15.
They are the definition of a glass cannon faction.
Yeah, but they're really fun to play, and that's I think, the biggest thing.
I think that's a you thing.
Well, fine. I find them really fun to play. A lot of their models are just really cool.
They have some cool models, for Sebestro feet turn with a Vulcan on, what's his face?
Prospero.
Is fucking like a drug. That is a really good feeling, no matter, like,
well,
what type of game you like to play.
Well, my second game I played against your Manowar player, like, and I, as I said, my list was super cobbled together, which meant that I had two Suppressors on Prospero, because none of them were painted. I couldn't be bothered trying to, like, say, one's on Locke and one's on Prospero. But for this game, it was pretty good, because it turns out with guided fire and fire sprays, you do a lot of damage with those, suppressors against Doom Reapers.
Yeah, I can see it. Like, they have their matchups. There are some matchups that Crucible Guard crushes, but that's what I found. And it's the same with Grimkin. Grimkin also have some matchups that are very bad for them, but that's just the kind of problem you're going into with a limited faction, where the faction itself has strengths and weaknesses, where most larger factions... have enough depth to them where you can kind of make up for those weaknesses. Grimkin and Crucible Guard have those, but it's a lot harder to make up the difference with the pool of models you have.
I think the big one for me is that both factions, like, if you're writing battle groups for them, they kind of end up almost all looking the same because of the way the points break down for those. I mean, you were mentioning a similar thing with, like, when we started this cast with how that Dreamer list emerged. It's just the natural, like, conclusion you get when you say, I don't want Carriana Rose, I want just as much shit as possible.
You want more, as many free points as possible, so you take a death knell and you cut everything else out. Everything else is fat, you want as much muscle as possible, support is theft.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right.
I'm going to get into that, by the way, because I've been accused of saying that a bunch. And to be fair, I've semi-meant that. So this is like this war machine libertarian idea of basically cutting all the garbage and just leaving only hard-working models. I'm going to tell you how it sort of actually works. Realistically speaking, what you want is you just want every model in your list to feel like they belong. And a lot of the time, the models that get cut as a result are support models because you realize you don't need X. And a good example is just Rupert Carvalho. How many lists do you see nowadays who actually have Rupert when they have options to? Because believe it or not, Crucible Guard have access to Rupert. And half the time, in fact, the majority of the time, he's just not there. Because it turns out his tough is not as useful as it used to be. His concealment can be replicated by other models, including the Railis Interceptor. And his other thing he does, Reveille, I think.
Yeah, stand up, is just subpar compared to every other anti-knockdown tech that's in the game.
Correct. You could do much better. So that's the thing with list building to me, is that you, especially over the course of several games worth of playing it, it tends to be like, the way, the support models usually are the first in the chopping block, but the way I tend to build lists, and I'm not sure about you guys, is that nothing is sacred to me if a model pretty much has to justify its existence to stay in a list. And oftentimes I'll just cut a random model just to see what happens, because that sometimes leads to really fun or even just new lists, because I thought, oh, we'll cut this guy, see if we can get away without playing him, and oh, look, and lo and behold.
I'd like to try that with the Zol list, because you have, like, there's a couple of, like, solos and stuff in the list where you can see the value and they do a lot of good stuff, but at the same time it might be worth looking at how much value they bring to each game. Like the Immortal Vessel I've been playing with.
Yeah.
Every game, only, I think, in of, like, the 10 games I've played with the list now, total, so that was, like, the 8 at CanCon and the few before and after, he didn't play every round, so it was, like, 6 at CanCon, a few before, a few after. The Immortal Vessel has been used, like, twice to arc spells.
Yep.
Other than, like, not counting the times I fucked up positioning.
Sounds like some kind of theft model to me. Get rid of it.
Yes, but, like, telemetry, that, like, it looks like it should fit really good, but the way I've generally played the list and into the matchups I've played, it just has always felt like it's actually not doing much, and it's sometimes worth just having around just because people look at it and go, I have to either deal with this model, or I have to be aware of its threat range, and then casters move around in ways that you expect them to because you've put a model that they think is a threat to you nearby.
Yeah.
And that's valuable. But at the same time, I've looked at things like, I've played into Gorton and into models with Blind. And with the Supreme Battle Engines, they tend to get fucked over hard by that rule. So you can take something like, for the same point cost, you can take a Soul Vessel. Sorry, not a Soul Vessel, a Extolar Soul Ward.
Yes.
And he can give guidance, which gives Isle of Sight and magical weapons, I think. Or just Isle of Sight, maybe.
No, it's both. Yeah.
Which, magic weapons is not an issue with the list, but the Isle of Sight can be situationally helpful where I need to charge through a cloud wall. And while Zol has Mage Sight, the rest of the army doesn't.
Including the gentleman.
Including the gentleman. So that means it's one more avenue where people can't hide from my units, from my models and units. But it also provides an anti-blind tech, which can sometimes just completely fuck over a battle engine, specifically the Supreme Gentleman at this point.
Yep.
So that's one of the things I've been looking at, but I also want to look at, like, Abaddon and see how many models I can cut to put in more novitiates for more tough bubbles and more damage buffs,
because
that's an option I have as well, and I think that's worth exploring. There's also the cutting of a Supreme Gentleman from 2 to 1, and then putting in a third unit of Immortals just to see if it's worth bringing more souls more better.
Yes.
Because a Supreme Gentleman and a unit of Immortals is exact points.
Yeah.
So you can easily swap them in and out. I don't know if that's the best way to go, because 2 Supreme Gentlemen is kind of disgusting, and a third unit just feels like more. It feels like more. It's not necessarily better, it's just more. And more can be sometimes better, but it feels, on paper, like it's too much.
Well, I'll put it this way. My general consensus regarding Exalted from the brief times I've played them, even in CID, I played them as a bet to see if I could play a game of Scorn. I amended that bet to be if I could play a half a game of Scorn. But yeah, every time I've played Immortals, they've basically been vanilla paste. Like, they're bland and a little filling, but
no, for the list, they were perfect. I just don't know if you need three units, because again, like you said, they're max out at power 13. You can make one, or depending on how many initiative, you can make them 15. But, like, the solos and, like, the Supreme Gentleman and just, like, the whole cohesiveness of the list is what makes it good.
Yes.
Not the spamming of lots of armor dudes, because that's actually not that good, and lots of answers have come into the meta.
Which I think is just a thing with a lot of lists, and something I've been personally trying to do is, like, whether jumping into a new faction or just playing, like, Kador itself, and playing, like, Doom Reaver's game, is just looking for ways to take whatever bland filler you've got and make it better. Or to make whatever support package you've got just more oppressive. Like, to me, one of the best things with, like, I don't know, like, Exalted was the fact that if you can have a caster who makes the Ancestral Guardians, your random fucking speed buff bots, actually dangerous, then you're really in business, because that's a huge buff.
Well, that's what I like a lot about Zol too,
right?
It's because they just spend souls to buy attacks, and he boosts the attack and damage as necessary. And you can do that with those guys, with Hakar.
Like, and that's exactly what you want. Like, for my part, when I played it in CID, I tried it with Xerxes 1. One, because he makes your immortals not really as much of a joke. They now go to Death 15 and Armor 19 to 21 on his feet. And then he also make good use of his, like, Stir the Blood ability. But the other thing, too, was that you have Tactician on, like, Ancestral Guardians and occasionally a feat to throw in there. And that was really fucking sweet.
Okay. I can't believe I forgot the fourth game of Champions. So I completely remember now, because it's the most ridiculous fucking thing that ever happened.
All right, go.
So I played against this guy. He looks at my list, and I'm playing Zaltu, and he's like, fuck this. I'm going to just kill you. Because I run forward, he runs forward, and he's like, okay, you're dead now. So he looks at my list, measures it out, and he has four Leviathans on Denny 1. Denny 1 can feed on me, and all the Leviathans have ranged to shoot me. So he pretty much does this. Feels them up as most as possible. It's not fully fuel on all four, but he gets a pretty good range. He pretty much puts me down to, with the first three, the last one, the third last one of the four, shoots me, kills me, but I've learned from previous games, I've learned from every game, and I put my novitiate nearby, and I roll the tough. So I've survived, and then it's okay. He's like, okay. I've got one more jack. So the jack goes up, rolls for how many shots he gets, rolls a one. And so then he rolls, okay, rolls to hit, boost to hit, rolls to damage, boost damage, kills me, roll the dice, and it rolls a six, and I jump up, standing with my hands outstretched, and I go, yes! Oh my god! So I've managed to, like, double tough my way to not dying. So then the game continues, and essentially, like, his stuff is all out of place with the entire intent to just try and kill me. So what happened...
Played for
the only reason that this had happened is I had moved my entire army up with the intent to feat, and I had moved Zol, I had castled my spells properly, was about to say feat, and then moved another model, and I realized as soon as I'd done it that I had just fucked my entire life.
Oh my god.
So I somehow survived this assassination run, do a bunch of damage, take out, kill most of one of his side stuff. I do a bunch of damage to his, I think I kill one Crabjack. I do a bunch of damage to the others. And he's like, okay, here we go. I'm going to cast Ghostly, move a bunch of model rounds and see if we can do this again. I'm like, well, I've healed since because my feat is is 3 plus D6 heal. And then I used a couple of my spare focus. I camped some and then used some to heal. And what I didn't do, which I should have done, is repaired my guy with a novitiate, because I moved the novitiate within 6 inches so that I had tough, but he wouldn't die, because he had seen how I'd survived last time. What I should have done is actually just walked up, hide behind my own caster, and then use the novitiate to repair more health. Mm. So at armor 23, and without his feet, he was going to have a hard time killing me. So, but he goes for it again. It was a pretty bad attempt. Like, there was no chance. And then we played and then I got a turn. And I was able to, like, pretty much just clear zones, do some stuff, kill some models, and pretty much kill, like, most of his heavies but one and score 5 points. So I ended the game 5-0. He was an awesome opponent. Pretty much after the assassination failed, he's like, okay, let's see how many, like, points we can rack up and see how, like, well we can do this next turn. Mm. So we pretty much talked through the whole, like, last turn just to see what we could do, what would happen. He was an awesome guy, an awesome opponent. And I apologize for getting, because that was one of, like, the most intense, like, fun games I've had all weekend. Anyways, let's go and talk about Grimkin, because that's what we promised to do.
Actually, if you don't mind, I'll
just... Oh, goddammit.
Alright, briefly speaking, my final round was against Jan. Low expectations, Jan. And has to be mentioned, because this was one of those ones where, remember I said that I was, like, playing a Frankenstein of an army? Well, it turns out, like, Yarn tried to kill me, because that's what you do when you can see through clouds, and Baldwin's hot-shotted Vulcan kind of blows Alexia up through McBain's feet. And then what happened was... And yeah, what happened was Batesy goes in like, alright, look, we're leaving now to go back to Newcastle. Give us the models back. I'm looking at them like, well, the Vulcan is Rosie's. The train is Rosie's. A good chunk of my army is Rosie's. I guess I better kill McBain right now. Like, literally right now. Otherwise, I can't do anything. And he's just going to steal all my models. So, that was a fun game, though. Because, effectively, that was like... Oh, man. Yarn, I've always got a lot of time in the world for Yarn. And unfortunately for me, Yarn also has a lot of time in the world for killing me or trying to kill me. In this case, he kept trying to shoot a Rocket Man 8, the Rocket Man leader. And it turns out between Dodge and the Railless Interceptor accidentally spewing exhaust everywhere, I managed to keep that guy just dodging left and right, trying to block line of sight to Baldwin after, I don't know, I killed Alexia and a bunch of people. Anyway, random aside done. Please talk to us about Grimkin.
This is me.
Yes, you.
All right, well, I mean, we've all seen the CID, right? And we all know that they're getting a bunch of UAs to make Naysayers and piggybacks good. They're getting the Melody Men, who are absolutely fantastic, top-notch.
Milady Man.
Grave Ghouls, who I'm unsure how they're going to end up due to their command fluctuating a bit. I've got to wait and see how they come out the other side of CID. And the guy who I think is going to end up being my favourite guy, which is... Okay, the man of many names.
Say it properly. You've
Baron
said
von Tunlich.
No, that's not what you said.
That's definitely not what you said.
A.K.A. Baron von Cunnilingus. A.K.A. Tahm Kench. For anyone who's played League of Legends, if you haven't played League of Legends, go and look up Tahm Kench and tell me that his abilities and the way he looks is not Baron von Cunnilingus. Because basically the advantage that Bump has is it's all quite cheap, right? Like, your Naysayers are cheap, your Dreadrots are cheap, your Hollowmen are cheap, Piggyback's not so much, but now they don't need the Death Knell as much that they got a free point of armor. You're gaining points there. But the problem is, to get them up to this new level, you're adding all these UAs, which are taking free card slots, but you want to take Malady Men, so you're probably going to have to end up paying for your UAs. And so you're taking them from this horde force to a bit more of an elite force that I still think I can only talk for me personally. I've seen other people do much better things with Bump than I can. But at the end of the day, where I'm still in this place where I've got, you know, guys like Jeff and Pagani who are saying that they think Hollowmen are one of the best units in the game, and I'm just sitting here and I don't see it. And without the Hollowmen to tie it all together, I don't know how I'm going to go with all this new Bump CID stuff. I mean, I'll still happily playtest it all. And I think, you know, it's got a real lot of diverse list building. So it's one of those CIDs where you just can't go at face value. This is good or this is bad or this is whatever, because there's so many different interactions and lists you can build. But given that the big problems I have and the secondary list I want is something that can deal with Tharn, that can deal with Primal Terrors, it's usually elite warrior model stuff that I'm fighting against. Yeah, so... what I think is going to be the solution is the idea of still maintaining this heavy force, because DM is just, it's so much more functional. It's just such a more well-rounded list. And if all of a sudden I can have a child or a heretic who can play frontline, and it kind of depends on where the command of the Baron ends up. Like, if he stays at 6, he's a bit shaky in the circle. If he gets to the same as Madeline Corbeau with a 7... all of a sudden that wipes out Wolf Riders and Blood Trackers from being able to shoot him down.
Hmm.
I can just pretty much go face with my caster, and all PT has is Animag and the Blightbringer. And all, you know, Tharn has is either Iona or Safety Goat or Pure Blood or whatever they happen to throw in the list.
Bridget and Carl could just pray it.
Yeah, it depends. Like, it's like Tong Lee can...
But you also have shield guards in the list if you're playing DM. Like, it's just... There's so much... Like, I think that just becomes the default. I think he's strong enough. And if you play down to, like, the five free cards and you actually play a second list where you've got... You take Cariani, you take him, you take some other stuff, because you may as well take up to 15 points worth of other non-beast stuff, because you're missing that free card slot, that the six free card at 90 points. I think that just becomes your second list, and I think between the two of them, you're so well covered into so much stuff that I don't see a need for me to explore bump that much. Like, I will anyway, because I think it'll be a lot of fun, but I still just... I don't think I play in the same meta or in the play same style or in the same way to the people who are making this game, to the point where I don't think I can ever get Holomans performed the way they do, and I'll never get bumped to the levels they will.
Well, I would say Holomen do get a lot better with Desperate Pace, but I do think they'll have the same problem, which is that they're still range 10, so they're 10 inches away from whatever they shot, apart from Holden himself. The fact that the Malady Man also works in Dark Menagerie means that your trash unit of douche rots is now actually usable, so I don't know if that changes anything.
Well, I still don't know if you ever take douche rots with in that theme force, because it feels like theft. Like, most of
it doesn't really fit, yeah.
It doesn't really fit. If you're going to sacrifice free cards as well, what I do think is actually quite interesting is that you can get Malady Men for free in the theme as we currently know it, which means you can actually get a free small unit into a bump list, which means now circle zones are much less of a weakness for the list in general.
Oh, yeah. You mean to a DM list, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yes, for DM.
Plus that random monkey guy, like, Malady Man's monkey is just a random murder thing.
It does work.
Yeah, it does the most
work. And technically they can Desperate Pace each other, so the monkey goes even farther, I guess.
You can just Desperate Pace the child.
Yep.
You cannot Desperate Pace the child.
It's units, right?
She's not a unit.
Yeah.
Ah, it's not units.
Well, that's why it's kind of nice if you do take Dreadrots in the list, but I still don't know if they do enough for the list.
I think you only take Dreadrots with Wanderer, because he has Veil of Mist, so they can get a little bit of Pathfinder. He gives them an additional 2 inches with his spray, and the minus 2 defense gets them up to mat 8.
Well, now you
at which point they're actually doing something.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now you can get 4 with Malady Men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, so, Desperate Pace is a good thing for that unit to pick up. I will say, from my perspective, like, Naslayers and Piggyback UAs are both incredibly good. Like, the Naslayer UA is, like, kind of the nuts.
Yeah. Amazing.
Fucking great. Yeah.
At the end of the day, you're still needing something. Like, it's still a small six-man unit that are quite easy to kill, less so now that you can't shoot them. But they're still going to go in there, blow something up, and then come back. If you're going against something with a big armor buff, a passive armor buff, something like Lightbringer, something like, you know, a Skidded Moans under a Death Knell aura, like, all of a sudden you've gone from -1 to -6 on your charges.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
And if that's the only thing you've got that can break armor, because your piggybacks still aren't killing anything, right? They're still not really doing that much. They got one half decent, semi scary, maybe charge with mat 6 power 15, and I might kill something. But then they're still just sitting there like a bunch of fat fucks and not really contributing much.
Yeah, piggybacks are a bit weird. Like, they have kind of the UA I'd want on shock troopers, because, you know, defensive formation is just a really defensive. Yeah, it is defensive formation. It's just a really good ability. The main problem with piggybacks is that they don't fit bump, not that they're not good, because they're kind of, like, if bump had access to incinerators, for instance, I think they'd fall into roughly the same problem, that the rest of bump is, like, this weird, wacky force of just light infantry and horde shit.
It's all skirmishes and stuff, yeah.
And you're like, why do I have these incinerators? Like, imagine they were adjusted for the fact that Death Knell exists. You're like, well, why do I want armor 19 douchebags, even if they do have vengeance? It just doesn't feel that right. And I remember you even talking about one of the bigger problems leading up to the WTC, which is the fact that bump does not have Pathfinder in almost any accessible form.
Isn't
you've got it either in a one-cost spell from which, if she uses that, whatever the
Boundless Charge.
Yeah, like the witch gives you the one-cost spell, so you're spending like a fury per guy, or you've got Wanderer who can put down Veil of Mists.
Yeah, but this is like effort. That's and requires. It's just effort. Like, why spend this effort when you can do other things?
That's
like, just...
the problem, it seems, with pigs, is it's really hard for them to mesh with the rest of the list. Or at least it has been until now. They've always felt like theft.
I know that every list realistically needs the holy standard of CID, which is Desperate Pace, Tactician, and Battle Plans. And obviously, Grimkin now have access to two of the three. They have Desperate Pace, and they technically have Battle Plans in the form of the random shit that Malady Man has. They don't really have, like, Tactician. And
I don't think they want Tactician. That's not a rule that's...
Oh, no, it's definitely not...
If you could charge Naysliers through the piggybacks and then breathe the piggybacks up in front of them again, yes, you could do some really good leapfroggy kind of stuff that would...
Yeah, it would. It wouldn't fit Grimkin as a, like, you know, a faction identity thing, but it would be fucking good for terms of...
And I don't think that leapfrog is actually that effective with the Naysliers because they out-threat the piggybacks. Because, like, they charge through, but the piggybacks wouldn't be able to walk far enough
to get...
Well,
they're not that much further threat. Like, piggybacks are speed 5, but Naysliers are only speed 6.
Yes, but then they're charging because that's the only way they do it.
Yeah, but so are piggybacks, because piggybacks...
Yeah, but piggybacks are trying to walk in front of them. They're trying to block... block line of sight again.
Anyway, it's a moot point because it doesn't exist. But I mean, if anything was going to have Tactician, I maybe would have put it on the Glimmer Imps just for their little 5-inch bubble, just so you could actually get a Glimmer Imp into a position that doesn't screw your charge lanes while you're trying to maintain line of sight to him. He is the most fumbly idiot I've ever had to try and play a game with. he just gets in the way. He's just like, follow me, guys. I'll make everyone easy to hit. And then everyone's tripping over him and he can't get in the way. And he's just like, it's like a Benny Hill sketch.
I still remember that my game for the WTC, I remember, which was against Old Witch 2. And it was Old Witch 2 and Bump. And I was playing Manowar, which meant I was playing actually suppression tankers and models to protect the suppression tankers. That was
Naysliers never get anywhere.
That was the day I conned the nickname Depression Tanker, and I know that it's not exactly a stretched combat kind of nickname, but it felt good.
This is the other thing with Bump, is that it's not versatile enough.
Yeah.
It runs into... It has too many hard counters. Like, if you're just running with Naysliers, is your only way of killing heavies, which they do greatly, but if you run into, like a Dormer that can't be charged, or anything with Polarity Shield, or... you know, rebuking, you don't have Eilish, or, you know, they have a second list with a whole bunch of, like, you know, armor buffs you can't bless your way through. Or, and then your Hollow Men are just losing range battles to pretty much every other shooting unit in the game. And you just, it's just too many things in a list pairing, which means you can't drop that list.
You're massive. Even if you're good for it, you're still massively disincentivized because you're like, well, I could play Bump, and it might be a janky game. Or I could play Dreamer, a known quantity of just oppression that I'm good for, and I don't think my opponent has really factored into.
No, but it's also just Dreamer's just well-rounded and beefy enough that if something goes wrong and you take a bit of a punch, you go, okay, well, everything's hard enough. Like, defense doesn't mean anything anyway. If everyone's got mat 10 troops. Everyone's got boostable infantry. Everyone's got... It's so trivial now, right? Well, so
defense is different. Defense is... only relevant if you stack it, and you have to stack it with your opponent not expecting.
And you have to spam it. It's not just stacking. You have to have high numbers, and you have to have high numbers on lots of targets. That's why Tharn is annoying, because you're bringing a lot of Def 13 or higher troops that relatively get higher stats. But when you just go, like what I've seen with Trolls, you get like one or two units of champions with high numbers, they can prepare for that. That's not an issue. That's one or two things and targets that you can plan and strategize for.
Or even just ignore, frankly.
Yeah. But you're right. There is a lot of stacking mat, which even the high defense skews are having hard times playing into.
But yeah, I mean, easy example for me is, again, Crucible Guard, right? Like, so you have Baldwin. Baldwin is, if you have defense as a problem, then he just takes it and just fucking washes it away through.
Because you stand and aim, so you get to rat 7, then on 17s and 18s you're hitting on, like, 50-50.
Baldwin has 5 different ways of dropping defense. He has a sniped Gorman, a sniped Hutchuck, himself has a Shadowbind, or a knockdown momentum catapult.
That too.
And he also has veteran leader, and he has a just casual...
So your rat
Yeah, eight. He has a casual buff to it, and
so
you're like...
the rat 8 aiming, so they're hitting 18s and 19s, which means the best buffed rocket men are still living most of, like, a little above average, but still that doesn't feel good.
Yeah, but then it's a case of, like, but then Thon is still a problem for someone like Baldwin, because a lot of his stuff doesn't actually hit everything in the army, it just hits certain targets that he's, say, shadowbound. I mean, yes, if you roll into the castle, you've shadowbound them, and you've knocked them down, you've prayed them, and you've done your battle plans, you're rolling in a plus 11 to hit. That's, like, that's fantastic.
Defense is a lot harder of a skew to get right.
Yep.
Armor is a lot more reliable, because it's hard numbers.
But then, but like, when we're talking about how good defense is, when you then break it down to just the victim stats that Grim can have, like, even running Wanderer, like, making defense 12, like, Hollowmen... under Starcrossed is it's not really worrying anyone to the point where it's really a really aggravating thing, and it's so easy to just accidentally kill all this Grimkit infantry, and then if you just like snipe out the like the Lantern Man, for example, then all of a sudden Hollowmen lose so much efficacy.
Yes,
and like and they're trying to move up in CRA, but then only half the time that they've got Holden, if you even took Holden at all, like they get weakened, which you know, isn't even relevant half the time against, you know, constructs and undead. Instead of a reposition all the time, which could actually let them see them, like, you know, move up, shoot some stuff in a CRA,
then
and not just sit there and die.
Yeah, they're 13 inches away from their target.
Yeah. Which is a lot better than 10.
Which is a lot better than 10. But, like, you compare that to an armor brick where your three main frontline, like, your linebackers, sitting there and they can all arcane vortex each other because most, you know, a lot of your anti-armor stuff is coming from things like Parasite or from, you know, Crippling Grasp or this, that, or whatever else. And just to not have to worry about any of that, to have this functioning line that doesn't get spelled easily and doesn't, you know, I've got shield guards and I've got
you
high armor.
You can do dumb shit as
like,
well, like if one of their armor debuffs is like fucking Ragman, you can go like Ragman walks up and casts his debuff and you say, ruin, get fucked.
Yeah, but you can do that with, like you can do that with Bump as well, but I mean, it's just, it's so much easier to take out the things that take out your heavies in DM than it is, like, I don't even know what Bump is trying to do.
To me, like, both of the minor factions have come out, recently come out, I should say, Crucible Guard and Grimkin, they have one theme which seems predominantly better than the other, and in Crucible Guard's case, it's Magnum Opus, and as we've been getting to, in Grimkin's case, it's Dark Menagerie. To me, the reason Dark Menagerie is better is because mostly Grimkin heavies depend upon corpses, like the Cage Rager needs it to arc spells and cancel spells. The Cage Rager's literal entire purpose is fueled around corpses.
And he can't get out there to get his own corpses because he's so slow, and even when he eventually does, he's probably engaged with something. So, you take spell slinging just off the table almost completely unless you're putting your caster way out there in harm's way.
Yeah, exactly.
As a bump player. Like, it's just such a trade-off versus Rise, which is one of the most frustratingly, at least now with the play dead, you get some other benefit to it. But the only things that benefited from Rise were piggybacks who were probably in melee already and just sacrifice movement and punch back, or dreadrots who stand up and still can't reach the thing that shot at them because they can only go 9 inches.
Well, Rise only really works with Feigned Dead, conveniently a thing that fucking naysayers can.
It also works in, what's the list? Primal Terrors. Primal Terrors, Rise is one of the most infuriating things because you're getting value targets that aren't dying,
yeah,
and they stand up, and then they get to have their complete turn. But that's also because
they get
their
Vengeance. And they're at 10, and they're all these other
That's
fun
right.
Stuff.
That's why it's really good in Primal Terrors, where in
Grimkin like,
it's really hard to get value. Your models just stand up so they're not knocked down, but they don't get all the extra benefits that Primals does, and it's not nearly as infuriating for it doesn't feel bad when you tough a Dreadrot, when you make a Dreadrot tough. It might feel bad with a piggyback, but then you're right. Most piggybacks that die are going to be in melee, which means they're probably dead again.
It's definitely not the same feeling as it when, like, a fucking Ravager toughs or even a Warmonger toughs.
And then they tough, and then they heal, and then they stand up, and then they kill something.
Sorry,
like, you've got Madcaps there as well. So you've already got to, like, and if you're playing Bump, you're probably taking Madcaps because, dear God, they are good.
You should. Those things are the best.
That's like literally the reason to play the theme, is because you have this really weird, interesting unit that has a rule system that gets around so many other rules, it's disgusting.
Like, you're going, shoot a chosen with a tree, walk it over, use Irish to take off the armor buff, run into it with a car scheme. You don't trigger rapid healing because it's not enemy attack, or you do it with a warmonger and you run car schemes into them, and then you don't trigger vengeance, and then King puts his cloud wall up again, and you sit there giving the middle finger to all these warmongers going, what the fuck just happened? How did we die? Like, it's such a fun list, but it's got so many shortcomings, and, like, you know, maybe it's just a me thing.
I think the bigger problem is that it doesn't complement Dreamer as well as what you'd want.
It's not even that. It's just that the mechanic itself, while really strong and really interesting, isn't enough to carry a list because it's random. It's like the most random that the game has, almost. And because it's like that, it's unreliable. Which makes
you just have to work so much harder to make everything above work than DM that just starts off like, all my moving pieces are already connected. Where you don't have to go and get a corpse for your arc node, or you don't have to go and make sure that this one specific model doesn't die so this whole unit just falls to pieces. Like, it's just, yeah.
Do you just want, what was it? It's, so, we can go back to Mark II with how crits worked, right?
Yeah.
So, you know how most factions have a risk versus reward mechanic? I'm going to present the Crix alternative back then. Reward. There's no risk-reward, it's just reward.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is definitely
reward.
It's just reward.
Dark Menagerie, so many risks. Dark Menagerie is not risk. Is not just reward. There is risks because it requires corpses to run really effectively, and corpses can be removed multiple ways.
I've played games where I've gotten like one corpse for the entire game and everything still functioned. Mm. You just have to play a bit more tight, but you don't need a single extra corpse. That's why I get infuriated when I see people running Dreadrots in their DM list. I'm like, it's just unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Which gets back to our whole like support is sort of theft concept, actually realistically, do you actually need this unit like Dreadrots, which ruin your list sort of, because when you test it and play it, you kind of don't.
That's right. It's just pure theft. But I would like to get away from this topic because it's really just getting negative.
I wouldn't. Yeah, like, to take it wrong, here's the thing also. Like, if you've got random lists and the like, and look, you can disagree with us on playing Bomb, frankly, I'm quite happily welcome, because I'd like to see someone make some shit like man caps and stuff work, because it definitely can work.
It can work. And it's so much fun. Like,
yeah,
it's such a fun list to play.
And like the problem, when you get down to it, the problem here is not so much of a non-functional list that will never do anything ever. It's more that this is a non-functional list to me because it doesn't actually solve what I want.
That's fine.
It's certainly functional in the sense that I make a bunch of madcaps and douche rots and piggybacks that are just gonna fucking make everyone.
You can win games with them. Like that's no problem.
Yeah.
It's not against enough breadth of the field that you can ever feel safe dropping them into a pair. It's my problem.
Or if you can make a list that can make it work, then fucking go for it.
I think we'll see more bump after the CID drops, and we'll see
how I'm super keen to see what people do.
Exactly.
Really keen to see what people come up with.
I'm curious to see what ends up sticking around after the CID jank just kind of washes over the Grimkin lists, and we'll see what sticks.
Yeah. Even if nothing else, right? If your long-standing Pathew Hickford Dreamer list will probably change at least somewhat due to the inclusion of the Grave Ghoul, because that guy is a total piece of shit.
Well, depending on how his command changes, because currently
hopefully will be a total.
It was command 5 towards the end, and that's not good.
Also, one thing we have not discussed at all during this entire thing was the Clockatrice, which will also change DM and possibly bump. Based on that, you're adding another heavy to the game that isn't corpse reliant.
I'm really not sure about bump. You've got a heavy that wants to get up the table, get in the way, and probably die in a list where you don't have many heavies and you don't have many beasts.
No idea.
And all of a sudden, you're just getting your one fury a turn from your dead beast, and you're like, oh, fuck, I wish I hadn't lost him. But yeah, I'm not sure how he works.
I'm not sure either, but it's still something that will change up the way points math gets to work as well in DM, because you're adding an extra heavy that is it 13 or 14?
He's 13.
Yeah, which means it's another point bracket that you can actually start. So you can take a Skinamones and a Clock Chicken instead of two Cage Ragers.
Yeah.
I think the Clock Chicken is really fucking good with Child as well.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah.
like
so Clock Chicken and Baron are getting windmill slammed at the child, and I'm doing everything I can to make that list my second list. When
I love abuse. I love abuse. Well, so does Cunnilingus.
It loves abuse. It likes Discord as a spell, and it's so the perfect. Good. And it's the perfect. Like, I've done Gorehounds, but Gorehounds were just a little easy.
Too fragile.
A little fragile to make it effective. This model is just like, I'm going to be here, and I'm going to be over here, and I'm just going to be a pain in the ass. And if you get it in the right spot, and they kill the model in the wrong order, and shit's gone wrong, then their caster ain't casting spells that turn.
Or even just the fact that
you get a free, like, you get a free abuse, and you got child sitting in the middle of the table going, "Oh, your dudes can't even touch me." It's just, it's so sexy.
Yeah, I really like the clock juice. I really like it with child, but I feel like it might do more for other people as well.
Yep, and I think that. To me, you like rounding this whole thing up, like, a lot of these models that they've actually put into Grimkin, I hope that they do the same to Convergence and Crucible Guard and even Infernals, like, in a year or two, right? They are interesting models. They're not just like, this is the model we introduced that has more stats, or this is the different kind of unit. It's like, okay, well, the only one I'd accuse of that would be the piggyback one, because it kind of makes the unit functional. Whereas, like, the Naslayer UA, you could take it or leave it, but it's actually a good model. Like, it's also a cool model.
It's great, yeah. It's such a strong model.
Yeah. It's a Naslayer on a rocking horse. Like, what the fuck is wrong with that?
Nothing.
All right, I think we're going to round this out with a bunch of stuff. So this is actually our 50th episode. Thank you for being on with us, Matt.
Hey.
So, some random questions, of which there's a bunch that really don't apply right now. So, most of these are about me as well. Is Chris Lawson confused without spam? I heard he works with Satan. How much support is too much theft in the list? Well, guess what? We covered most of that. Am I Lawson confused without spam? Oh, definitely.
That was a lot of, like, mumbling.
I didn't understand a word of that, dude.
Do I know not what to play without my spam? Correct. I don't.
Well, he does, because he plays Manowar, which is, like, not spam at all. It's a lot of elite troops with different types of units working together. It's, while he can play spam, he's more than capable of playing non-spam.
Realistically, I like pairing my spam with a non-spam list to fool people into thinking that I know what I'm doing.
That's right.
Boom.
Also, there's another thing that Chris did not talk about at all, is that there's rumors of him dealing with Satan, and that's absolutely true. Chris is a member of War Machine Hell, where he is best friends with Satan.
I don't even know who War Machine Satan is these days. It's sure. Apparently everyone.
I don't know.
Where's the milk turtle? Says Michael Chili Winters. Oh, God, that's Colin's thing. I'm going to let Colin deal with that. Klaus basically yelled at Brian for interrupting me, which you should, because Brian, you should stop interrupting me.
But you fucking never shut up.
Always interrupt loud, Chris.
See?
Always.
See,
especially
Klaus?
When he's eating on cast. The only way I agreed to be on this cast was that if Chris didn't eat anything the entire...
Thank you.
It's true.
Show.
I did instead settle on the liquid diet, which has done wonders for me right now.
I got sick of this mukbang podcast disguised as a War Machine
Except
podcast.
The problem is it keeps fucking playing with the bottles. Stop it!
How do you prep for a loud tournament? For example, CanCon was the most important thing. Mental analysis, prepping for certain opponents, such as myself. Alcohol. Correct.
And apparently taking whatever you fucking feel like, because that's what we did.
Also dumplings. Realistically speaking, if you want to know, it's just settling on what you're comfortable with, because the War Machine's meta, like, it doesn't actually matter. It's not like a Magic event. It's a Magic sort of code that sends into about 3 or 4 big decks, whereas when you think about War Machine, every faction is rolling their own particular cook and at least has 2 competitive lists, and realistically more. Like, call it 16 lists at least to prep for the meta, and you can't, and then you have random curveballs thrown at you. Like, hey, tournament staple Sturm and Drang is busy wrecking the meta. How do you figure that one out, right?
Just take the things you know and love that you've got reps with and shovel your way to victory.
Yep.
Pretty much.
And again, regarding the alcohol consumption, so to me, we have a concept called altitude testing, which is literally basically the movie Dodgeball. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball. If you can play War Machine drunk, you can play War Machine when sober.
Yeah.
Okay.
Luckily, I'm a high-functioning alcoholic, so that really helped A, calm my nerves, and B, get me through the finals. So, yeah, beer good.
And finally, has Chris lost his... This really is all about me. Has Chris lost his drive for top-tier War Machine events, as in, does he just focus on the WTC? One, WTC is a top-tier event. Two, I'm probably not doing it this year on account of having done it the past 4 years and starting a new job, but I am tempted to go to War Machine Weekend instead, so...
High five!
Boom!
They actually want, maybe, us to be there. Because seriously? I sent out a thing for podcasters, and I said I was possibly going, so
oh, shit.
Now you might be going, so Dark Guidance might be part of a thing. I don't know. I haven't heard anything since it was announced at the end of last year's.
Oh, God. Well, we might be at Warfare Weekend. You heard
War Machine
here.
Weekend?
Well, I think, I think it's now called Warfare Weekend, regardless, you heard it here first.
Okay.
Question mark? regardless, though, like, personally speaking, I think driving for events, like, you kind of want to focus your year around certain events you want to go to and want to do well at. And if you don't want, if you don't even care about it, right, and you just want to go, that's also fine. I mean, fuck, that's what I did this year at CanCon. I didn't really care if I placed or not because, as far as I was concerned, I had other fish to fry in my like terms of like life goals, and more importantly, I just wanted to just hang out with you guys and have a good fucking time. And that's what happened. I mean, my sure. biggest regret was not watching you fucking smash Colin with your dreamer Jank. Oh, sorry, it wasn't really Jank, was it?
Well, I turned up, yeah, just wanting to do the same thing. I'm like, I don't really care. I just want to play some new lists and mostly get drunk and have dumplings. And I accidentally won a tournament, and that made my weekend very stressful. And I don't recommend accidentally winning tournaments if you're not prepared to do well in.
Having done it yourself, yeah, I'll agree. It's a bit of a weird feeling, right? When people just go, you go from zero to hero, and you're like, yeah. How did this happen? In any case, I think we're done, and we're probably at the end of our, well, I'm certainly at the end of my beer consumption.
Jesus.
Fantastic.